Good evening. Welcome to tonight's meeting of Bethlehem City Council. It is Tuesday, May 4th, 2021, 7:01 p.m. in Town Hall. We please all rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God,
indivisible,
with liberty
and justice for all.
Thank you all. Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan.
Present.
Mr. Cologne.
Present.
Ms. Gramsci-Smith.
Present.
Ms. Negron.
Presente.
Dr. Van Wert.
Present.
Mr. Reynolds.
Present.
Mr. Walder.
Present. Communication 6B will be added to tonight's agenda. It is an additional comment letter from the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission on the privately proposed zoning text amendment for the Mountain Tower site. For first reading of tonight's agenda, item 9B. This letter contains some new comments in addition to the commission's previous comments that were read at the April 20th council meeting. Ask the clerk to please read communication 6B.
A comment letter from the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission dated April 23rd, 2021 concerning the review of the privately proposed zoning text amendment that would affect the office mixed-use district at the former Martin Tower site at 1178th Avenue. The commission stated that the proposal is generally inconsistent with the regional plan because the presented amendments would result in suburban-scale development patterns that are not consistent with the character of the city or conducive to multimodal accessibility. Additionally, they state that because the proposed amendment, if adopted, would affect more than one property, they suggest that the developer approach the zoning hearing board.
And that communication has been added to our agenda. The reason for that is that it came after our agenda was set last week. It was additional comments from the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission. Seeking approval for the minutes for April 6, 2021. If there are no comments, the minutes will stand approved. And moving into public comment, we have two names signed up for first comment and four for second comment. So I will reach out to those names first, Mr. Caratola, then Anna Smith. Good evening,
Hello?
This is Bethlehem City Council.
Oh, hey, how y'all doing today? I'm Artie Caratola, 813 Wofford Street, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, in Bethlehem City. I got some questions that basically that I need to ask to City Council or the mayor, if he's there. In relation to Article 717.01, in relation to that article, in the provisions of in B of it, that exemptions are political rallies within the city limits for any particular person running for any elected position for the upcoming election. Could they be done anywhere in the city limits? And could musicians be playing out there? It doesn't elaborate on that. It says that that it's exempt from noise, or that you can't complain about it. But I think there should be a matter of a time limit. There's no time limit on it, like saying 3 or 4 hours. There's no time limit on that. I think there's something that needs to be added to that. Has there been any additions onto that Article 17.01 since 2006 when it's been put in there. Has there been anything added to it?
I don't have that information.
Oh, okay. But if somebody's running for a political office, can they have some bands perform outside for a little bit of time without people complaining about the providing, of course, it's normal music. It's not like it's a loud, screeching, screaming type of rock and music or rap and stuff that's really overpowering with the bass and the drums and all that. Just if it's decent music, is it acceptable? It says it is. It says it's they're exempt from any kind of noise, but don't state any particulars on it states upon what it let me pull it up and we can take a look at it. And I hate when that happens.
Mr. Caratelli, I imagine
my computer froze up again. But anyway, in relation to that, do you have any information? Do people need to get a permit for something like that?
I would imagine any use of public property would require a permit.
Well, if it's you get the okay from Yasco Park or from the different places, does it still need a permit from the city?
The city would issue a permit for public property.
Oh, okay. For any kind of a political type of rally where somebody's running for an office and something of that nature, and so who do you contact on that? Would that be with department?
That would be the law bureau.
The legal department.
Correct.
Okay. So the noise ordinance, where it states the provisions of section 717.01 shall not apply to, and it says political and labor rallies, athletic events, etc. The use of such public address systems, amplifying systems, bullhorns, musical instruments, tape messages, or similar devices which are used at political or labor rallies or athletic events or other City of Bethlehem license permitted or authorized events to extend already protected by law. The other thing is this number seven of the provisions, which has to do with entertainment between the hours. It says they're exempt. Facilities that offer entertainment between the hours of 12 p.m. to 12 a.m., that's midnight, in outdoor venues located in an industrial redevelopment district and or industrial redevelopment residential district. That means that they can have entertainment without having to worry about how loud it is, according to this, how it reads. If they plan to make that stick, and there should be some provisions. It should be the article needs to be amended, because as it stands, from 12 noon to 12 midnight, outdoor venues in an industrial redevelopment district or industrial redevelopment residential district, they can have music going as long as they want, as loud as they want. They could be playing screeching, rocking music and rap, whatever they want to do from that. Oh, that it doesn't state any provisions. It says that they're exempt from all that noise, from that 40 feet thing. They're exempt from that.
Mr. Caratella, we've hit our 6-minute time limit here, so I would say if you have additional questions, maybe reaching out to the Law Bureau.
Okay.
Would be the best
all
bet.
All right. And I just wanted to present that to you all, in case you know this, and the people
thank
listening,
you.
That they should look at Article 717.01.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Caratella.
Thank you. You have a blessed
and
day.
Stay I wish safe. You luck stay with home. Your DMX tribute concert. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Our next caller is Anna Smith. Thank you. Good evening. This is Bethlehem City Council.
Good evening. My name is Anna Smith, and I live at 631 Ridge Street on the south side. So tonight, a diverse group of Southside residents has gathered virtually to engage our community in thinking about responsible development and the affordable housing challenges that our neighborhood currently faces. This topic has emerged as a primary area for concern among residents that were surveyed recently by Community Action in the development of a new neighborhood plan for the Southside, and is a familiar topic around our dining room tables, in text message conversations, and backyard chats with neighbors. Neighborhoods always change, but the rate of change on the south side seems to have sped up recently, with over 550 new, almost exclusively luxury apartments at some stage between planning and occupation right now. Neighbors across our community have shared with us the feeling that they have no power to influence the process, let alone knowledge that the changes are coming. Projects like the proposed 104-foot building for South New Street that was unanimously denied by the Historic Conservation Commission become lightning rods that threaten our community with false choices that are designed to split us apart, to create a zero-sum game where we must choose which component of our community to save and which to sacrifice. We're here tonight because we reject the notion that we must pit economic development against park preservation, affordable housing against neighborhood character. We reject the way forward for our community that is determined by folks who do not live in our neighborhoods, perpetuating cycles of marginalization of the voices of individuals who have long been excluded from our city's decision-making processes. We see an opportunity to create a new generation of Southside leaders by empowering the residents of our neighborhoods to participate in envisioning a way forward that identifies and builds on what has made our community the place where anyone could gain a foothold. A community with affordable housing is our hallmark, whether in a 100-year-old row home, multifamily buildings on our street corners, or garages converted into an apartment or two in our backyard. Our affordable homes include new subsidized construction like the Hay Street Loft, a dozen rehabbed homes sold through the Lehigh Community Land Trust, a few Section 8 developments built into the hillside, a row of habitat homes along the mountainside, group homes that have existed for decades to serve adults in recovery, and well-managed grooming houses here and there throughout our neighborhoods. We get affordable housing in our community because we've been the most affordable place for folks to build their lives and grow their families since Bethlehem was founded. And we know that affordable housing is complex. And when done right, it's not a building you can point to. It's integrated into the very fabric of a community. Bethlehem offers a model of affordable housing that could inform the rest of the city, the rest of the Lehigh Valley for that matter, as the region confronts a housing supply crisis. We believe that folks could learn from the density of our Southside residential neighborhoods and commercial corridors, which, if they were a standalone city, would be the 52nd most densely populated city in the United States, immediately after Boston. We believe our neighborhood's mixed income and mixed ethnic and racial character could be a model for other communities that have tended to segregate by each.
Ms. Smith, are you still there?
Hello,
this is Bethlehem City Council.
Hi, thank you so much for calling back. I apologize, my phone just cut out. I'm not sure exactly what, so I'll attempt to get from where I was.
Thank you.
We believe that our neighborhood's mixed income and mixed ethnic and racial character could be a model for other communities that have tended to segregate by income, race, or ethnicity. We believe that the diversity of housing options in our neighborhoods is one of our greatest strengths. We believe that the character of our community is protecting and preserving because it shows us a path forward that builds on history and reinforces our community's identity as a place where all are welcome. So what about new development? Don't we always ask for more affordable housing on the south side? If you know me, you know I love data and numbers, so I'm going to throw some at you now. Yes, we have an affordability issue in our community. But like all of these topics, the data on affordability looks different for the city of Bethlehem than it for other communities in the Lehigh Valley or elsewhere in the country. According to census data, housing affordability in our community is primarily an issue among renters. And on the south side, where 72% of residents rent their homes, this is certainly a major cause for concern. So who are the folks struggling to pay their rent and utilities every month? Well, according to census data, of all the cost burden renters in Bethlehem, that is the households that do not have affordable housing, the households we want to assist, the households that have lifted up a cry for more affordability, 74% of these cost burden households, the overwhelming majority, make less than $35,000 a year. These are the folks that need affordable housing in our community. According to HUD, these are folks that, for the households with the highest income of $35,000 a year, can afford to pay a maximum of $875 a month in rent and utilities combined. These are families stretched to the limit, paying rents that average $1,000 a month or more, perhaps a few dollars more. These families need a solution that meets their needs in our community. And there's no question about it. That solution will only come from subsidies and really creative thinking. It will not come from market rate development or 10% affordable units in a market rate building, because the standard of affordability that these units meet is already higher than what these families can afford to pay. The New Street Tower, for example, may be an affordable housing solution for folks moving here from New York or New Jersey, but it's not a solution for our neighborhood. I'm here today because I've been talking with Southside residents for a few months now about their hopes and fears for our community, in community meetings and in response to the Ahearst closure. And we're so thrilled with the news today about the new grocery store. Concern about new development that places a burden on the Southside community while not addressing the needs of residents and small businesses is the most prevalent thing that comes up in discussion. While my friends and neighbors may not have the data that I'm presenting to you here, I'm hearing that they feel the pressure of new development in our neighborhoods and feel powerless when it comes to having a say in the process. This is one of the defining features of neighborhood change that leaves folks of color and low to moderate income residents behind, the sense of powerlessness. I ask you to challenge that dynamic. You may not live or work on the South Side or even set foot in our neighborhoods very often, but your choices moving forward will define who gets to live here and what their quality of life will be like. Use your power to lift up the voices of your South Side neighbors who don't have any representation on council. We will be inviting you to join us to hear from South Side residents about our data and evidence-based vision for responsible South Side development and strategies to promote affordable housing after the primary election. We're ready to do the hard work to find solutions that are inevitably more complex, but can have a lasting positive impact on our neighborhood. We look forward to sharing our stories and ideas, and we hope that you will commit to working side by side with us to create a more equitable community that lives up to the Southside's reputation as a place where all are welcome. Thank you so much for letting me over the time and for calling me back. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Have a good evening. City Council is accepting comments on any subject not being voted on this evening. I have additionally four names signed up, and I will contact those individuals after this period. James McNally, Jane Cook, Lynn Rothman, and Sebastian Z. If anyone would like to make comments to Bethlehem City Council on any subject not being voted on this evening. Hello, this is Bethlehem City Council.
Hi, this is Greg Zahn. Good evening, Council. I do have some prepared comments, so...
Thank you, Mr. Zahn. If you could just state your address for the record and proceed with your comments with a five-minute time limit. Thank you.
Sure, thank you. I live on East Mercator Road, 224. Regarding the current and evolving Martin Tower property development plan, I have a question focused on sustainable development and the attention given to it. As we try to develop the necessary self-control regarding greenhouse gas emissions and the grave threat of climate change to our way of life, I've seen and heard some mentions of sustainable development by Dr. Van Wert, Mr. Waldron, Mr. Slingerland, and Mr. Crownfield regarding the concern for green areas, growing local trails, the monocracy, impervious surfaces, and net zero development. I want to thank the Bethlehem Gadfly for curating the resources developed around this important topic. How ignorant would some of us be without his efforts? Having said that, this past year, a number of Bethlehem residents and organizations with council leadership set out to help develop Bethlehem's climate action plan for reducing our carbon emissions. Higher density housing, you know, that's in the plan for the development, does align with more sustainable development goals. Otherwise, however, how does the development plan align with our cap to reduce carbon emissions? By incorporating existing technologies for sustainable building, such as integrated site design, passive and active architectural design, as well as solar power generation, pervious materials such as asphalt and concrete, which are already in use, and water reclamation, those are a few that I can think of. Has this been directly addressed by the development commissions, city leadership, and the developer, Mr. Ronka? Readers and some of the parties involved in this plan may or may not be aware of climate-friendly examples of more sustainable 21st century city design and their significant benefits for health, community, and climate. Mr. Swingerland has focused on the important idea of making cities walkable and bikeable and accessible by mass transit rather than only carbon-emitting motor vehicles. The Martin Tower property development is an opportunity to truly improve the site and its use, such as by reducing that paved cover and re-greening as much as possible. I know that's been discussed. Because it was previously covered, though, by so much impervious material, doesn't mean it must remain that way. That would not be an improvement in itself. So, you know, did the developer say he's worked on this plan for 15 years and invested tens of millions of dollars? Well, that's the nature of the beast, and especially one of this size, isn't it? I'm sure there is a considerable profit to be made, but the city and our current and future families will endure any negative impacts of a plan not thoroughly considering the above needs and technologies. And for how long would we endure that? So I just want to know that proactively these ideas have been addressed. Thank you very much for the time.
Thank you for your comments. Have a good evening. Bethlehem City Council is accepting comments on any subject not being voted on. The number to reach us is 610-947-7963. Hello, this is Bethlehem City Council.
Hi, my name is Delia Marrero. I live at 607 Bloom Street, and I wanted to discuss affordable housing tonight. I'm here to discuss the deed for affordable, stable housing in Southside Bethlehem. I purchased my first home in South Bethlehem in 2019. When I think about my family's long history, many of them started their homeownership journey in South Bethlehem. Most recently, I have noticed proposals for new luxury apartments and the development of luxury housing units. And I wonder, where are the housing options for low-income households and affordable housing options? According to the MIT Living Wage Calculator, a single adult with two children in our area must earn $34.42 an hour to support their households and families. That is way above the average of what our members, our residents in Southside community are earning. Before I purchased my home, I tried looking for an apartment. I discovered quickly that I would not be able to rent at an average of $1,200 to $1,400 a month. And I was fortunate enough to purchase a home in South Bethlehem that accommodated myself and my two children comfortably. But I know that's not the case for everyone. As someone who is literally one unexpected expense away from financial hardship, I have the security of knowing I have an affordable mortgage payment. Even at that, I'm still a cost-burdened homeowner. When I look at the South Side, I see the potential to be a real mixed-income neighborhood with safeguards for vulnerable populations by working towards development that focuses on preserving culture and history of the South Side. The New Street building would only add about 10%, which was around 6 to 7 units of affordable housing, affordable units, aside from the structure being too big, that simply just isn't enough for our community. Are we trying to run our low-income black and brown residents out of the South Side? If there isn't a focus on humanity and ensuring that there are safeguards in place to protect the most vulnerable among us, then we risk losing what makes our community such a special place, where folks of all income levels can live side by side. I also would encourage members of City Council to visit our communities and reach out if you're interested in learning more about the realities of our communities and some of the challenges that we face living on the South Side. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comments. Council's accepting public comment on any subject not being voted down. 610-997-7963. Hello, Bethlehem City Council.
Hello. My name is Ann Evans, and I live at 464 Montclair Avenue on the South Side. I'd like to just talk for a few minutes about responsible development. It's really important to me that the diverse neighborhoods of our South Side are developed with the interest of the residents who live in them being listened to, which has not always been the case. In recent months, the Community Action Development Corporation has had some public meetings, Zoom meetings, to discuss what are the interests of people who live on the South Side and what do they think we need. In past studies, those have been very divergent from what the city thought we needed. And it appears that that has not changed. Big developers coming in to develop buildings that are too tall for the landscape of the South Side, and then throwing in the carrot of, well, there's some affordable housing. 10% of a building is not throwing in a lot of affordable housing, which is a serious, serious need for us here on the South Side. We would really like to work cooperatively with the city in an active manner, in a proactive way. Every time one of these projects comes up, we're always, as residents, on the defensive, you know, reacting, as opposed to being able to proactively discuss this with the city and with developers even before we get to the stage where they're asking for all kinds of changes and permits and things in the city. So I really like to urge City Council to listen to, you know, the votes of like the HCC voting down these large buildings and sitting down with us and talking about what affordable housing really could mean here on the South Side. The South Side has always been where people started out and were able to buy, you know, or rent in an affordable way when they came to our city. That should still be and can still be the focus of what the city is doing now. And we would like to see that continue. So thank you for your time. Bye.
Thank you for your comments, Ms. Evans. Accepting comment at 610-997-7963 on any subject not being voted on this evening. Good evening, Bethlehem City Council.
President Waldron.
Good evening, Mr. Gallagher.
Good evening. Ed Gallagher, 49 West Greenwich. Fight the good fight, gang, as I always say. I'd like to make two suggestions about possible resolutions that City Council could make. We often make resolutions to hire legislative bodies to indicate our support and to nudge them along. I wonder if we couldn't think about resolutions for common sense gun control and what we might call common sense police reform. Two kinds of things at the higher level that seem to be getting some traction. So I'm wondering if council might put their rhetorical weight behind those kinds of things. The other thing I'd like to suggest, which I mentioned last time, was marking the important anniversary of the murder of George Floyd on May 25th with a public safety meeting here or a committee of the whole or whatever kind of committee would be appropriate. A time that we can look back on a year which has challenged us to think as a city of being especially anti-racist and to thinking about new ways or different ways to do public safety. I've been reading back through the Gadfly archives, actually, and a very busy and interesting year in this regard. And I think it would be important to sort of take stock and see where we've come from and where we've gone. For instance, we could hear about the Community Advisory Board of the NAACP, which the city participates in. That would be in operation now about 11 months, and I don't believe I've heard anything about it except one or two very fleeting references. Maybe the NAACP could be invited to such a meeting marking the anniversary of George Floyd to report on what is going on in that Community Advisory Board. We could hear about the exciting idea of the Community Engagement Initiative. I remember talk of two different types of meetings, meetings that the city would spur, meetings that outside organizations would spur. I remember talk of city council members referring to the city clerk notices of these meetings that would be published on websites so city people would know and be able to attend. I really haven't heard anything about those kinds of things. So bring us up to date on the Community Engagement Initiative. And in that resolution from July of last year, was added at the last moment by amendment an element of dealing with Professor Oaks at Lehigh University and that police research group. Haven't heard any more about that. Are we still doing that? Have we decided not to do that? What's going on there? And about the police department itself. I'm not a big social media kind of person, which sounds kind of ironic, running a blog. But I can't help but notice lots of community outreach by the police on social media. And just by chance, I happened to hear an interview with the chief on a radio station about two or three weeks ago pitching the event at Touchstone Theater, in which she mentioned the beginning just at that time of a thing called the Neighborhood Outreach Initiative. I hadn't heard anything about that. That's a new kind of thing. It would be interesting to hear about that. But those community things for me are a little bit on the margin. What I think we also need to hear about is more of the nuts and bolts of police activities. We seem to be hiring now, so what kind of person are we looking for? How are we kind of pitching the kind of department we are? Do we give tests to recruits? Once we've hired people, what kind of training are we doing? Training has been mentioned several times at our meetings, but it never gets beyond the generality. I don't know what kind of training goes on. We have 154 officers. Do they get trained every year in three or four different kinds of things? Is there some sort of phased operation that goes on? I read in the paper that we're joining with a training initiative at Northampton County. Is that a complement to what we do? Is it a supplement to what we do? Is it different than what we do? A lot of vagueness in my mind about the nuts and bolts of policing. How we hire, how we train, and internal affairs. How do we make sure that the bad apples are weeded out? And a meeting like that on May 25th would be a good time to refresh us on how the pilot with the Health Bureau is going on. So important anniversary, lots of things we could be caught up to date on, and we could set some goals for the future. Thanks for the opportunity to talk, gang.
Thank you for your comments. Have a good evening. Hello, Bethlehem City Council.
Hi, my name is Kimberly Carol Smith. I live at 833 Carlton Avenue on the South Side. I'm speaking as part of the tag team about affordable housing that you've been hearing from tonight. And I want to say we appreciate the city work that went into the exploration of how to increase affordable housing in cooperation with local developers. But evidence, and that's nationally, not just here, suggests that private developers are constrained by the market since they're accustomed to building within a particular cost structure and find it extremely challenging to combine that with affordable housing for the most vulnerable people. And again, those are people with incomes at $35,000 a year or less. So it's clearly more urgent to be more creative, to explore local data and the needs of each neighborhood in our city. And as Anna Smith noted, although affordable housing is a national, regional, and valley-wide concern, it's important to consider policy creation based on our city's neighborhood assets. So what serves our people, what supports stable communities and makes our city strong, what's working, how do we preserve what is affordable or nearly there? How can we identify assets to guide us to successfully develop Bethlehem's affordable housing vision and plan? Our plan should be based on local data. Who needs what? How much can they pay? Who's being left out? And our plan should ask, what would it take to convince local nonprofits who do housing development work to come together to explore and develop new models, particularly aimed at rental housing, not just homeownership models, in order to enhance Bethlehem's existing housing stock? And the work may not take place in a vacuum because nonprofits and that kind of coalition might work on the challenge with the city and with residents while considering other aspects of what grows a healthy community. And just one example, and there are many other kinds of things we could even be thinking about, a coalition could consider things like apprenticeship programs that could enhance employment, help residents develop skills in housing rehab, and bring more small investors into affordable housing work. And Jumpstart Germantown, which some of you know about already, as well as other preservation-related housing rehab programs in various states, provide us possibilities for this kind of work and this, and will provide us some models that we can start from. They've been shown to work for communities that need affordable housing and that value and protect historical building stock and historic districts, which is the case for our city, I think. That's what we'd like to protect while developing affordable housing. And big developers do things on a far larger scale, so why not let's see what we might do for affordable housing by working on a smaller scale but with more redevelopers. Multiple studies show this kind of work is both effective and transformative in numerous ways. And again, happy to provide those resources. When I say study, happy to provide you with a bibliography if you want it. So how can you go about exploring these housing models? We propose to not simply hold forums where residents merely share information that gets dumped in the laps of consultants or city officials for them to make decisions. Instead, how can we truly engage the expertise of those who know our city on the ground, the residents, among other people, and have the strongest understanding of affordable housing, nonprofits, real estate, people, whoever. And I think the Student Housing Overlay Ordinance is a great example of how stakeholders, from residents to landlords, institutional representatives, city officials, and other professionals, came together to work with a consultant and crafted a plan that was community engaged from the start. And although developing affordable housing strategy for Bethlehem will be a larger undertaking, I think the community engaged example our city undertook with the overlay ordinance provides a roadmap for successful planning. The city developed a plan based on intentional conversations that were ongoing over an extended period. Residents and professionals worked together, interacted with the city's paid consultant, and did their own research into workable models for student housing in residential neighborhoods. City council members sat down with stakeholders who had identified key issues, became informed early on, and then felt invested in the process, so they became stakeholders. City officials were able to utilize all of the information and energy and mediated and worked out some compromises, crafted a workable plan. They shared multiple drafts with stakeholders. They tweaked it and sent it on to the council. And by the time it reached you all, this overlay ordinance had community and council support, born of authentic participation, genuine listening and engagement, all of which means real buy-in for the end product. So I'm concluding here. I promise we can work as a community to ameliorate threats to our residents' sense of place, their sense of disempowerment, their sense of belonging that is at risk when they are facing so much change in their communities that they don't see themselves as part of that. When housing that is being built says this is not for you, we can engage diverse constituencies in the process of affordable housing development. We can work together, investigate established models, find new ways to approach affordable housing in the community and preserve our community assets from individual structures to streetscapes to people. We can engage in assets-based approaches that include drawing upon the deep knowledge of residents and professional communities in concert with the city. And then instead of working piecemeal with every new development proposal, focusing on false choices that pit one community asset against another asset and developing minimal affordable housing options that may not serve our most vulnerable, let's see what we can do as a community throughout Bethlehem. And I mean that, not just the South Side, throughout Bethlehem. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your comments. Still accepting comment on any subject not being voted on this evening. Hello, Bethlehem City Council.
Hi, my name is Rachel Leon, and I live over on 946 East 5th Street.
Good evening.
Hi, I know everybody's talked a lot about affordable housing tonight, and I just kind of don't want to beat that dead horse, because I think people are doing amazing work between the people who are calling in and members on our council. But one thing that I did want to talk about in concern to these high-rise buildings that are popping up in South Bethlehem is my concern for the environmental impact that they might have. Excuse me. I think over here in South Bethlehem, we kind of bear the brunt of shipping traffic, and our air quality is really just diminishing. And if we keep building these buildings higher and higher, we're going to create what's called environmentally unfavorable zones, and that air is going to be trapped and it's going to be very, very stagnant. So I just want to make sure that when we're considering these things, we're considering the environmental impact. I know these issues are extremely complex, and I know that as a city, we really need the development and we need the tax revenue that comes along with it, but I hope that we can find a way to balance that against the safety and the well-being of the residents that we have, especially over here in South Bethlehem. Thank you.
Bethlehem City Council is accepting comment. Hello, this is Bethlehem City Council.
Hi, my name is Seth Moblin. I live at 76 Hillside Avenue in South Bethlehem. I'm just calling as a part of the group who's calling in tonight to talk with you folks about affordable housing and responsible development. I promise I'll do my best to be brief. And I don't want to repeat what's been said, but I just want to call council's attention to a few of the major points that have been raised so far. I want first to say we're at an extraordinary moment in the city. For the first time in almost 25 years that I've lived here, we have many members of city council talking about the importance of affordable housing. That's enormously significant, and we are really grateful to all of you. Secondly, I want to stress that everyone who's called in, and I think the quite extensive network that we represent, a network of residents, people active in the nonprofit sector, business owners, I believe that all of us who are calling in share the basic development priorities that have been expressed by all of you on City Council, and I just want to summarize this as simply as I can. I think everyone on City Council, like everybody who's calling in, knows we deeply need more affordable housing, and as Anna Smith and others have said, that means genuinely affordable housing for working people. I think everyone on council and everyone who's calling in knows we need residents in the urban core who can support local business. Everyone who's calling in, like everyone on city council, knows that we need to strengthen our tax base. We are all in agreement on this. One of the things you all are hearing tonight is that there's a lot of concern on the part of those of us who live in the South Side about the recent proposals for out-of-scale building and development projects inside the historical conservation district. Bethlehem is justifiably proud
of the fact that we were way ahead of the curve in creating historical conservation districts, and they've served our city very well. And I think everyone on the council is keenly aware that 10 and 12 story projects, 90 foot projects, are in excess of what the historic conservation district permits. What we are trying to communicate to you tonight is that we have a genuine path forward on affordable housing. We represent a larger network of people who are eager to collaborate with council to create authentic affordable housing proposals and development projects. A 10 or 12 story luxury apartment building with a handful of rental units that exceed the needs of ordinary Southside residents is not an affordable housing initiative. What we want to say is we are eager to collaborate with you to develop effective affordable housing strategies which are consistent with the priorities that you folks on council have expressed. And we'll be reaching out to you to set up a time when you can sit down, as you all did, or many of you did, with the student rental overlay process, where you can sit down with stakeholders in the community, with Southside residents, to talk about what those authentic affordable housing initiatives look like that can genuinely support the benefits that we gain from the historic conservation district. So I want to thank you all for listening, and I want once again to really, really thank members of City Council who have expressed their commitment now to the project of affordable housing, which, as we all know, is desperately important for our community. So thank you.
Council still accepting comment on any subject not on tonight's agenda. 610-997-7963. At this point, I'll turn to the other four names that have signed up to speak. First, that would be James McNally. Bethlehem City Council.
Yes, hello, how are you?
Fine. If you could give us your name and address for the record and proceed with your comments to council with a 5-minute time limit, please.
Yeah, okay. My name's James McNally, and I live at 1128 Eaton Avenue, Bethlehem, PA, ZIP 18018.
Thank you. You can proceed with your comments.
My comments are that, as a resident of Bethlehem, all my life except for military duty, and I live on Eaton Avenue for 34 years, and I'm concerned with the speeding and the noise from loud mufflers on Eaton Avenue and also on 8th Avenue. We in the area have been faced with building, with the Eaton Avenue Apartments, New Bank, 5 buildings, St. Luke's Hospital and Lowell's, which has brought more traffic to the neighborhood. And now with the development of the 53 acres, I'm very concerned about what type of speed control will be installed, if any, because right now there seems to be very little. Everyday speeding, loud mufflers, plus pollution, people need to slow down. And if you have cars, motorcycles with mufflers, they have cutouts on the motorcycles, and of course, which is not permitted, but they have it. And the Bethlehem Police, what I'd like to know is, does the Bethlehem Police test for muffler noise, for example, in the 35 mile per hour, the decibel's like 88 decibels, and then if you go to 35, it's 92 decibels. And these cutoffs, and they call them boom booms, you know, where the cars actually backfire, and they, you know, a noise which is really, really loud. It's you know, if you live on a main road, you get that, but I mean, it shouldn't be like that. I mean, we've always had loud cars, which was, you know, I understand that. However, with this new, I mean, and it seems like it's everywhere. I was up in Allentown, and they were driving up there with their loud mufflers and speeding, and you can just look at the car and you know what they're driving. You have a lot of modified exhaust systems, you know. And my concern is, getting down to the thing, is what happens when they put in that 53 acres down the street with the properties that they're going to put in and everything? What type of traffic control do you have, or do you have a plan for that? And also, I have another question, because I wrote the mayor and he never got back to me, and this lieutenant from the police got back to me, and he agreed it was a very, you know, problem with speeding and loud mufflers and everything like that. But my question is, does the city even have testing for mufflers? You know, do they do a testing? Because things are only going to get worse. They're not going to get better with traffic, especially when that 53 acres down the street is built. And I just want to know what they're going to do about the excessive noise, because it is against the law. It doesn't seem like it's enforced, but it is against the law. And, you know, that's more or less what I have to say. I could talk on it a little longer, but I think I've said everything that has to be said for my area.
Well, thank you for your comments this evening. The chief of police is with us on this meeting this evening, and she's heard your comments, so I would relay those to her to possibly follow up, and she'll have your contact information as well.
Mm-hmm. Before you go, though, I was thinking, that they need to slow down. And for example, if they had these bumps, you know, road bumps. I know there's one out on Main Street Extension, and I don't know why it's there, because Main Street Extension does not have the traffic that Eaton Avenue has and 8th Avenue here. It's really, I mean, it's changed. I've lived here all my life, and this area has changed so much, you know. And I just want to know if they're going to put in any type of things for speeding, you know, and also the test, you know, for muffler noise. If they're going to have cameras, to target those cars. Because when you develop that 53 acres down the street, you know, that's a lot of property.
I can understand your concerns and your frustration, Mr. McNally, and I'll relay those comments to our chief of police, and hopefully that can start a dialogue and maybe give you a little bit of a solution.
Yeah, because I did write the mayor, and I called the mayor's office quite a few times. I called the police, and however, nothing's really been done. Once in a while, you'll see a police car in between, sitting on the island down here in front of the Eaton Avenue apartments, or they might pull over somebody. But all in all, I mean, this at 5:55 every night, I got this Mustang with really loud pipes. I mean, it just rips down the street. I mean, we shouldn't have to, as a public, we should not have to put up with this. You know, we pay taxes, and it should be enforced. And I don't know why the police aren't enforcing this, because they're all over the area now. And that's it.
Thank you for your comments. You have a good evening.
And thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak. Right. Good night.
Jane Cook will be our next caller.
Hello?
Good evening, this is Bethlehem City Council calling.
Hello, hi. This is Jane Cook. My address is 208 West Langhorne Avenue in Bethlehem. And I would just like to read from a letter that I sent last week to the Bethlehem City Council and Planning Department, as well as the Mayor's Office, so it would be public information. The board of the Monocacy Creek Watershed Association is very impressed with the care that the City Council took at the April 20th meeting to consider the redevelopment of the Martin Tower site as it affects our city as a whole, including the precious resource that we too often take for granted, the Monocacy Creek. From a historical perspective, we know that the creek was the heart of the Moravian settlement. The Monocacy has not always received the appreciation that it should. As one of our board members, Jose de Jesus, said in a video that was released nationally last month by the Theodore Roosevelt Conservation Partnership along with Trout Unlimited, he stated, "For the past 15 years, there's been an enormous amount of development north of here. The creek cannot handle the quick runoff. It gets wider, warmer, and becomes barren of trout, barren of life. Without funding to help the stream out, it's going to continue to deteriorate. We can't let this happen. It's such a precious resource for people to enjoy." I included a link in the letter, and I would encourage everyone who got the letter to check out this remarkable under 2 minute video, and other people who would want to see it, I would encourage them to go to the Monocacy Creek Facebook page for that link. Our main area of concern is for the integrity and the protection of Monocacy Creek with its environmentally sensitive tributaries, floodplains and wetlands, plus its varied wildlife habitats. The increased development upstream of Bethlehem is already putting a strain on this unique watershed, and we must make every possible effort to protect it when we can. Our specific concerns about the current Martin Tower redevelopment proposal are the large amount of paving and paved areas. It's almost 60% of the total site, not including any of the building footprints. And the limited amount of green space and buffer area, which is only about 25% of the total site. And actually, most importantly, our concern focuses on the stormwater management protocols that need to be put into place. We ask you to enact policies that protect and preserve this jewel of the waterway as you make decisions about how to best develop this prime land, all of which is uphill of our precious Monocacy Creek. We urge you to consider how each part of the plan will affect the creek's environmental integrity. Please begin by demanding the highest design and land use standards be applied to the entire Martin Tower site. Thank you for consideration of these concerns.
Thank you for your comments. Our next caller will be Lynn Rothman.
You've reached the voicemail of Lynn Rothman. Please leave a message.
Moving on to Sebastian.
The number you have dialed has not been recognized.
Good evening. If you could proceed with your comments to council with a 5 minute time limit, please.
Thank you for taking my call. It's been, first off, excellent to hear a lot of fellow residents of Bethlehem voicing their concern about zoning with the new wave of construction that will have a drastic impact on our community, and looking to protect those lives of people who've done a great service to our community for many years. It's deeply important, so I'm very happy to hear many people expressing their concern to protect those individuals who protected our livelihoods in many ways through their work to just jobs in the neighborhood. By extension, I'd also like to talk about the Martin Tower project that is being proposed and some of the zoning ordinances, specifically in reference to a letter that was submitted by Scott Slingerland, the executive director of CAP Coalition of Appropriate Transportation. This letter was submitted to members of the Planning Commission on April 14, 2021, and a number of other members of City Council and leaders in the City of Bethlehem. Personally, I recently sold my car to pursue a life of only living by bicycle, and I look forward to some of the changes that were being discussed about future trails and accessibility. As a personal anecdote, when I use 8th Avenue, Chandlersville Road, and many other streets throughout Bethlehem, it's pretty just taxing to use those roads because the traffic is pretty intense, and there's not many bike lanes or consideration for bicyclists as well as pedestrians in those thoroughfares. And like, I have the advantage to be able to choose a life where I don't need a car, but many other people rely on public transportation and use their feet and bicycles to get around in our community. So I just like for continued respect and pressure on developers to work with what we as a community need, which is better access for those who cannot afford to buy into a car. Additionally, within this letter, there is a specific call of a question for a developer to have modeled traffic flow on Chandlersville Road and Elizabeth Ave. This is item 5 on that letter that was referenced before. I believe that any of the traffic proposals and modeling that was being referenced by the developer were 20 years old for when the Martin Towers was originally under use by PP&L, but as we all know, times change and traffic has changed, and as some other residents have expressed, the 53-acre development will have a significant impact on traffic in that area for pedestrians, for noise, for pollution, and I just like, as I had heard in 2 weeks ago, the meeting, many members of council had expressed that they are intent on protecting people's access to the area and are trying to be considered that. And I would just like to resound their voice and say I appreciate the thought, but do please keep the pressure on these developers and not let them wiggle through with promises of economic development, because it is the people of this community which make us strong and who we look to protect. Finally, in conclusion, being aware of some of the events with regards to COVID relief funding and the City of Bethlehem receiving, $33 million. There is a number of other communities in the surrounding area who are also receiving this funding. It is my understanding, after having listened into a meeting in the City of Allentown, that there is a deadline to state for which those funds are to be, what those funds are to be allocated to, although unfortunately they have not released exactly what the metrics are which restrict the spending of those. I don't see on tonight's meeting agenda that that is to be discussed, but with there being a looming need for the answers to be had, I just hope that that can be held and is kept in the minds of us. A final point on that, which I think is important to many matters that have been discussed, is just access to this information. So some programs have been put in place in other like cities like Allentown that have fallen on their face with very good intentions and having the financing to back them. They just fall on their face because people are not aware of them. So if at all possible, I ask the City of Council to keep attention to finding ways to voice the good intentions and plans you have as a committee, whether that be by working on the website or through additional media resources, just to share that message out to the community so that the community has a better opportunity to hear what is being proposed and have an opportunity to respond. I'm very thankful for City Council to be hosting any of these meetings virtually. They've made them very accessible to me. I look forward to, you know, the power of virtual reality to help us all that more. And thanks again. And the way you pronounce my last name is Zabaruka. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
You've reached the voicemail of Lynn Rothman.
Accepting comment on any ordinance and resolution to be voted on this evening. If Ms. Rothman, if you're willing to call in to make comment, or anyone else. Hello, this is Bethlehem City Council.
Hello.
Good evening.
Hello, Councilman Waldron?
That's me.
Okay, this is Lynn Rothman. I don't know why my sweet voicemail does that time. But thank you. Do we have a good connection? May I make my comments?
Yes, we can hear you loud and clear. You can give us your name and address for the record and proceed with your comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Lynn Rothman, 870 Rothman Lane. I'm speaking tonight on behalf of the Bethlehem Environmental Advisory Council, or EAC. And for those of you who don't know, EACs are officially created arms of the Pennsylvania municipal government. They're non-political bodies that act in an advisory capacity to the governing boards that appoint them. An EAC may develop policy proposals, research issues, execute projects, and make recommendations regarding land use, sustainability, and renewable energy. An EAC also serves in an educational role to both the city and the public. So the Bethlehem EAC was established in 2007 under Article 146. And some of the powers stated in that article include make recommendations as to the possible use of open space and environmentally sensitive land within the city of Bethlehem and its surrounding areas, advise the city on issues of energy conservation, and review subdivision and land development plans. In keeping with this charge, the EAC made recommendations regarding the Martin Tower site in 2019 and supports the recommendations made by Scott Slingerland, Executive Director of the Coalition for Appropriate Transportation, in his letter of April 2021. The Martin Tower property is an opportunity for sustainable development in keeping with the newly created Climate Action Plan. The Spurl Trail Connector referenced in Mr. Slingerland's letter is in keeping with the transportation, walkability, and green space strategies in the plan. Goals and the accompanying strategies in the Climate Action Plan also encompass stormwater management, which is especially crucial as precipitation increases, the greening of Bethlehem City, and the incorporation of energy-efficient design and renewable energy. The Martin Tower development has the potential to further these goals outlined in the plan. In 2019, we offered recommendations in the following subject areas for the proposed development. Density, consolidate uses and cluster commercial buildings. Regarding parking, there is no apparent reason to exceed the amount of parking spots required by the city. Use shared parking to maximize the use of each parking space. For example, daytime office workers like to leave by 6 p.m., whereas restaurants and bars can utilize those same spaces on nights and weekends. Ample parking spaces to allow narrowing of access roadways. Utilize permeable pavement. Include parking garages in lieu of surface parking to reduce stormwater runoff and mitigate the heat island effect. Consider parking underneath apartment buildings. Trees. Note that established trees have a higher carbon sequestration capacity than new plantings. Every effort should have been made to preserve and retain existing trees. To compensate for felling of mature trees, we recommend replacement on a 2-to-1 basis. Green space. Green spaces flow and filter stormwater runoff, mitigate the heat island effect, and provide habitat for wildlife. Furthermore, green space as part of the development creates the opportunity to improve quality of life. Natural light and connection to the environment has been proven to add to productivity and relieve stress. We recommend larger areas of green space interspersed between all buildings. Buffer area. Natural corridors surrounding the property support and maintain existing wildlife and absorb stormwater runoff. The minimum buffer adjacent to wooded areas and slopes bordering the Monocacy Creek should be 200 feet. Light from buildings and parking lots should be directed inward so that it doesn't disrupt native species. Stormwater management. Traditional methods of stormwater management don't account for recent increases in the severity of rainfall events, necessitating the use of innovative methods of stormwater control. As the city has to comply with permitting requirements under the MS4 program, we advise the following.
Stormwater management on site should be integrated and include the removal of contaminants as opposed to only channeling it off site. This is especially crucial as the Treasure Monocacy Creek borders the property. Pollutants from the gas station and contaminants from automobiles and salt are of particular concern. Permeable pavement would allow for greater infiltration. Natural flares, swales, and wetlands would absorb and filter stormwater and provide wildlife habitat. Energy. Complete an assessment for solar panels on all buildings, in parking lots, and on top of garages. Install solar panels where feasible. Install electric vehicle charging stations in both residential and commercial sections of the development. We urge the city and the developer to work together to fulfill the commitments in the Climate Action Plan, which was funded by the city and created in partnership with residents, institutions, businesses, and organizations. Thank you very much for your patience this evening.
Thank you for your comments, Ms. Rothman. City Council is accepting comments from any additional callers who would like to make comment on any ordinance and resolution to be voted on this evening. The number to do so is 610-997-7963. This will be our last opportunity for public comment this evening. Moving to communications, communication 6A.
A memorandum from Michael Alcall, Director of Public Works, recommending a contract with Celebration Fireworks, Inc. for the annual July 4th fireworks show. The cost is $34,000. There are no renewals.
Resolution 10B is on the agenda. Communication 6B.
Comment letter from Lehigh Valley Planning Commission dated April 23rd, 2021 concerning the review of the privately proposed zoning text amendment that would affect the office mixed-use district of the former Martin Tower site at 1178th Avenue. The commission stated that the proposal is generally inconsistent with the regional plan because the presented amendments would result in suburban-scale development patterns that are not consistent with the character of the city or conducive to multimodal accessibility. Additionally, it states, the proposed amendment, if adopted, would affect more than one property, and the zoning amendment proposal is directly related to the development proposed for a specific site. The LVPC recommended the developer seek a variance from the Bethlehem Zoning Hearing Board.
The zoning text bill is on the agenda for first reading as item 9B. Reports. I have no reports this evening. I'll turn to the mayor.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a few reports that I do have a condensed version of the State of the City speech requested by Council. The full speech is on the City's website along with the video. An update from our Health Department as of yesterday, a total of 31,312 people have been vaccinated by the Bethlehem Health Bureau. The Health Bureau plans on winding down their mass vaccination clinic at Wind Creek by the end of May. Smaller clinics will be held in Town Hall, as well as some targeted clinics in the community. The Health Bureau is holding a vaccination clinic at Freedom High School and Liberty High School on May 10th, and these clinics are being held for students 16 years of age and older, as well as their parents, and we are coordinating that with the principals and Dr. Roy. Second, we had a very good announcement today pertaining to AHARTS, and AHARTS will be revitalized and redeveloped into a full-service grocery store to be named the Ideal Food Basket, and the owner of C-Town is the new owner of the former AHARTS building, the future Ideal Food Basket. The goal is to renovate the facility and to try to have it opening by November or December. It's great news for the city of Bethlehem, great news for the South Side. So I want to thank them for their investment in South Bethlehem. And number three, just a quick comment regarding one of the previous callers about the American Rescue Act. Needless to say, when we get the guidelines, and we expect the guidelines and regulations from the Treasury Department next week, That will give us more clarity as to what the money could be spent for. We have a general idea, but we still are waiting for the guidelines, as the other cities are, from the Treasury Department, and needless to say, that will be made public and it will come before City Council for your approval. And with that, I'll try to give a condensed version of the State of the City speech. Let me begin by thanking my department heads and City Council for allowing me to address you this evening. It's been said that nothing accelerates innovation like a crisis. As we know, innovation has always been part of the Bethlehem story. There's no better example than our past with Bethlehem Steel. Perhaps now more than before, we've seen our story transcend with innovation and a renewed entrepreneurial spirit happening all around us as a result of the pandemic. The decisions we made this past year, the ones we will make tomorrow, will determine the future of our city for generations to come. My administration has risen to the challenge and will continue to do so. Adversity often creates opportunity. We responded to the challenges of the past year. We were creative, we moved forward, and we planned for our future. While my administration continues to manage the responsibilities of the cities, many of the things we've come to appreciate and enjoy about Bethlehem are done in partnerships with the tireless efforts of community organizations, health networks, and educational facilities. Dr. Roy continues to offer progressive leadership and innovative education to our children. And facing the pandemic, the district quickly stepped into action and worked tirelessly with community partners to find a way to provide online access and learning for all of its students. The school district's support for Northside 2027 Neighborhood Plan and the partnerships with our Health Bureau and Police Department has been much appreciated through their effort, which will result in revitalized neighborhoods. The city's healthcare facilities are second to none, with both St. Luke's and Lehigh Valley Health Network ranked in the top 10 hospitals in the Commonwealth. They are both important strategic partners and continue to support our city and community in many different capacities. Over the years, Lehigh Valley has sponsored free parking in our business districts around the holidays, and St. Luke's signed a five-year $120,000 sponsorship of the Bethlehem Golf Club. In addition, St. Luke's supported partnership with the Hispanic Center has been a valuable asset to the Hispanic community in our city and to South Bethlehem. But this year, it is the commitment of both hospitals, along with our health bureau, in getting our community vaccinated that is most appreciated. We are very fortunate to have these two highly esteemed health networks in our city, and I want to thank President and CEO Rick Anderson and President and CEO Dr. Brian Nestor for their partnership during my tenure in office. Our economic partners of LBDC, Bedco, and the Chamber assure that the city is seen as the vibrant city it is, with the many possibilities for business growth. And throughout my two terms as mayor, their collaboration with the city and our businesses has resulted in long-term economic growth, resiliency of business, and improved quality of life here in Bethlehem. Our partnerships are the foundation needed to sustain and advance our city's growth, while continuing to attract new companies, jobs, and talent. I would like to thank them for their tremendous support of our businesses during the pandemic. In addition, I would like to acknowledge the support and partnership of Wind Creek. Their willingness to provide us with sanitizers and PPE and to allow the city to use the event center to vaccinate the public is greatly appreciated. In addition, many thanks to their employees who volunteered countless hours assisting our health bureau at every clinic. And during my tenure as mayor, the city is making great progress in achieving the goals that were outlined in my first State of the City speech in 2014. At the center of these goals was one that would ensure the sustainability of our city, making Bethlehem financially sound, and I'm pleased to announce that the state of the city is strong. When I took office in 2014, the city had a five-year $40 million projected deficit and a BBB- bond rating. In 2020, S&P conducted a credit review. They analyzed our financial status, and I'm proud to say they reaffirmed our A-plus credit rating with a stable outlook. Our strong financial report was built by developing and implementing strong financial strategies through the consultation with my financial advisory committee and with the support of City Council and working closely with the City Controller. We appreciate that. Changes were made to make Bethlehem leaner, stronger, and more strategically prepared to tackle and to meet the challenges of the future. Improvements like consolidating departments, embracing new technologies, streamlining purchasing and reducing and refinancing debt made us more efficient. In addition, we leveraged our purchasing power to achieve better deals for energy, banking, and healthcare, saving the taxpayers money. We are currently in the process of replacing the 1950 outdated huts on Roger Street. Our Public Works Department is overseeing the transformation of former water control room in City Hall into a holding facility for housing stray dogs. And since 2014, we have milled and paved over 40 lane miles using over 40,000 tons of blacktop. And this past year, we paved 13 lane miles. We also completed the upgrade of 5,000 Cobra Head streetlights to LEDs. And our city website, along with my new Bethlehem app, have been revamped so visitors and residents can get information quickly. During my time in office, Bethlehem experienced two historic snowstorms in 2016 and 2021. Several years ago, we upgraded our storage facility and fitted our trucks with new plows in order to better equip to handle such snowfalls. Furthermore, we utilized new technology to improve monitoring, optimize the plow routes and road treatment, conducting operations to evaluate results. We can now track services in real time, not only for snow, but for leaf collection and cleaning streets. This tracking system ultimately reduced overtime and improved service. Bethlehem's new climate action plan will aim to reduce community-wide greenhouse gas emissions 33% by 2025, 60% by 2030, and reach net zero emissions by 2040. Bethlehem will lead by example by purchasing 100% renewable electricity from municipal operations and continuing to invest in cost-saving energy reduction initiatives. We've already reduced municipal emissions by 38% relative to 2005. We are committed to safe drinking water. This past year, our water filtration plant received its 12th consecutive award for its optimization program. As our world evolves from the pandemic and with more people increasingly spending time outdoors, and we had a very positive announcement, he was the safe governor today, the presence and upkeep of our streetscapes, paths, parks, and recreational facilities become more important. Our work on improving streetscapes has made areas safer and more welcoming to residents and visitors alike. Improvements, including sidewalks and trees, were made along 4th Street. And we anticipate the new improvements on South New from 3rd up to Farrington Square to begin shortly. We're about to begin Phase 5 of the Greenway, which will connect to Saucon Park. And additionally, numerous improvements are presently being made at the Rose Garden. Memorial Pool, which opened in 1957, has undergone a $5 million renovation with an expected opening in June. And the golf course underwent a $1.75 million renovation, and the course has posted successful seasons and set records of play since its upgrade. At public safety, my administration has spent more on public safety than in any other area. From 2003 to 2009, the city did not replace any fire trucks, and as a result, we had an aging fleet. And in order to bring our fleet back in line with national standards, we purchased 8 new advanced life support EMS vehicles and 5 new engines for the fire department, serving all sections of the city. And we even purchased an all-terrain vehicle for off-road EMS calls and rescues that we used during music fests. Lucas devices, automatic chest compressors, were acquired and placed in all EMS vehicles. And we consolidated our 911 center with Northampton County, a very complicated transfer with critical implications. We completed the consolidation and continue working to make sure that Bethlehem citizens receive the highest level of service. And in September 2020, I announced the new police chief to serve the citizens of Bethlehem and lead us progressively into the future. Chief Cott has already brought new energy and perspective to the department. She's a strong advocate for community policing, community partnerships, and additional training, especially in the areas of mental health, cultural awareness, de-escalation tactics, implicit bias, and crisis intervention. I think she's done an excellent job. We've had great success with the Naloxone program, and the police department and the health department initiated a drug recovery program called Be There, Bethlehem Police Assisting in Recovery. Chief Cott has reorganized police personnel to better serve the community. This is the first restructure in over 20 years. Units have been realigned under a more efficient command structure and categorized into three primary groups: patrol, support services, and administration. Most importantly, the new realignment will support criminal deterrence and detection, as well as create opportunities for meaningful interaction between our officers and the community. And I think the chief and I will have more to say about this in the next few weeks. And I would be remiss if I did not acknowledge the tireless, unwavering work of our health bureau, especially Director Chris Winrich and Bob Dubodnik, our Director of Emergency Management. Through Chris's leadership, our city was prepared and has really served as a model for the rest of the state. Our health staff has spent the past year addressing COVID-19 through investigations, surveillance, community awareness, education, mitigation, and recovery efforts. Our police, fire, EMS, emergency management, and other city staff should be commended for their assistance to the Health Bureau at the COVID vaccination clinics. When I came in office in 2014, the Lehigh Valley economy was growing faster than other regions of Pennsylvania and the Northeast. I made the decision that it was time to focus a significant amount of our energies on our neighborhoods, something that previous administrations did not have the luxury of doing. Initiatives have been developed like Bethlehem Blight Better Initiative, Northside 2027, Northside and Southside District Retail Analysis, a new Northside LIRB, a renewed Southside LIRB, a new rental housing plan, and a student zoning ordinance, and the list goes on. My goal was to make sure that we focus as much on community development, making Bethlehem a better place to live, learn, and play, as we had an economic development during the decline and eventual closure of Bethlehem Steel. Out of this came a revamp and a mid-domain program where we employ a transparent process to identify private sector partners to tackle our most blighted areas. And through Northside 2027, the City Community Action Development Corporation of Bethlehem School District and Moravian College have partnered with residents to identify neighborhood issues like improving public space, fostering economic vitality, and supporting neighborhoods through services, outreach, and community development. Investment through a federal designation, Neighborhood Revitalization Strategy Area, will see millions of dollars in federal investment over the next few years. This neighborhood now will be anchored by a food co-op grocery store, a great addition to the city, has benefited from over $2 million in public infrastructure spending, including a $100,000 upgrade to Friendship Park. To support our neighborhoods, we knew we needed to change our rental housing inspection process to data-driven, inspection-based process recommended in the city's blight analysis. Moving forward, we will license units annually and inspect all residential units for the first time in the city on a three-year rotation basis. With City Council support, we enacted a provision that will beneficially impact the quality of housing provided in the city's 14,000 residential rental units. New employment opportunities continue to be added to the city with an additional development on a former Bethlehem Steel site. Companies like Walmart, Zulu, QVC, Reed Milburn, Curtis Wright, Trammell Crow, Ecotech Marine, Ecopax, and recently the news that Nike will be locating here. These businesses are providing thousands of jobs. In fact, when you look at the LBIP and Majestic, we're looking at an 85% build out and approximately 90,000 jobs and approximately $1.6 billion spent. And in addition, Wind Creek is in the process of constructing their $120 million 270-room hotel, and we certainly look forward to working with them as they continue to develop their property as a destination. And our recent efforts have been focused on helping our current businesses, especially those in our downtowns. Through our efforts, we have directed over $2 million with council's approval of investment into our downtown businesses and have helped to facilitate much more through county, federal, and other private programs. This includes purchasing of outdoor dining equipment, parklets, PPE, direct grants to companies, and funding for the Southside Ambassador Program that work to maintain a clean and inviting atmosphere. We will continue to support our businesses through these challenging times. I hope that they will adapt and emerge stronger as a result. Bethlehem is undergoing transition all over the city, whether it be facilities, equipment, technology, or program. We are planning, adapting, and investing to meet the needs of our growing and diverse population, and Bethlehem has been called, quote, a uniquely vibrant historic city. We are proud of our history, and we have a strong commitment to honor our heritage. Historic Moravian Bethlehem, currently a National Historic Landmark District, has a strong possibility of being named a World Heritage designation, one of only 24 sites in the United States. And during the course of the last 7.5 years, I've taken pride in honoring the history of our city and the spirit of those workers that came before us as we work together to shape the future of this great city. One thing is certain, the future of Bethlehem is bright, and Bethlehem will continue to be the jewel of the Lehigh Valley. And that's my condensed report, Mr. President. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your report, Mr. Mayor. We will continue on now with our agenda. Ordinances for final passage, Ordinance 8A.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh, Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the Zoning Ordinance Section 1322.032 to amend provisions for multifamily dwellings in the CB and CL zoning districts. Bill 14-2021 is sponsored by Ms. Cramsey Smith and Mr. Waldron.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
A.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. New ordinances, Ordinance 9A.
An ordinance amending Part 13 of the Codified Ordinances of the City of Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, as amended, known as the Zoning Ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, by amending the city zoning map in connection with 1843 West Broad Street and 1852 West Market Street. Bill 15-2021 is sponsored by Mr. Grone and Mr. Waldron.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Ms. Cramsey Smith? Ms. Cramsey Smith?
I'm sorry, I wasn't. Can you tell me again what one we're. Are we on 9A?
9A, yeah. This is the reason.
Aye.
Thank you. Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. That's 7-0. Ordinance 9B.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh, Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending Part 13 of the Codified Ordinances related to zoning with respect to properties in the office mixed-use district by amending Section 1311A through B pertaining to the configuration of off-street parking and driveway access onto arterial streets, and Section 1314.02B5 to lessen the minimum rear yard setback. Bill 16-2021 is sponsored by Mr. Callahan and Mr. Waldron.
Just to lay out the timeline here before we dive into this, this is something, the text amendment that has been proposed by the developer is something that's gone through Lehigh Valley Planning, the Bethlehem City Planning Department, as well as a public hearing that we had 2 weeks ago where we first heard what was being proposed and started to weigh in on that conversation. This is our first reading of that ordinance. Any ordinance, this included, will require two readings and two votes with a majority vote to pass. If council decides to make any amendments to the text, zoning text amendment that is in front of us, this would re-trigger the entire process of the planning commission's having to review any changes that council deems to have made. So we would be starting that process over again. So just to give everybody a little bit of background on how that process works, to go through the two planning commissions and then coming to council for two readings. This is something, obviously, that we have talked about dating back 6 years when there was a much different council than we have this evening. So some of the conversations that we had then and some of the needs have changed quite a bit in that time. But I think it's important to weigh into this. There was a lot of conversation 2 weeks ago about some of the issues and priorities that members of council had and were advocating for. And we did get a letter in response to some of those conversations that is dated April 28th. I believe everyone has that in front of them. And some of those items in there were the general genesis for the project, for the changes that were being asked of council, trees and planting, shared parking and green space, impervious coverage, stormwater, traffic, walkability and trails, the Burnside, Chris, affordable housing, tax revenue. So there's quite a few items put into that, and I do thank the developer for coming forward and presenting their perspective and trying to meet some of those questions head on. Anytime we have a development project that's as large as this, there's going to be a lot of questions, there's going to be a lot of feedback, and I think this is the beginning of that conversation that we're having this evening. So I would turn to any other members of council if they have any questions or comments. We are joined this evening by Mr. Ronka and Mr. Wagner, and I believe they're available to make comment or question, answer any questions that council members may have this evening. If anybody on council has any questions for the developers, now would be a time that we could get into that, or if there's any internal conversation that you wanted to start, we could have that as well. I did ask, 2 weeks ago, potentially for the administration and representatives from the developers to get together and talk about some of those issues. I'm not sure if that's happened. As far as prioritizing some of those items, but I think this is a good starting point to that conversation. This packet that was given to us dated April 28th. And again, I do thank you, Mr. Ronka, for answering some of those questions head on.
Sure.
Is there anything, I don't see any members of council chomping at the bit to step up here to start the conversation. There's Mr. Callahan. I saw you first. If there's anything that you would like to add or any questions that you have for the developers.
I'll defer to Dr. Van Wert.
Thank you. Dr. Van Wert?
Sure. First, I just have a fact-finding question, and then I have a couple comments. So my question is actually for Mr. Alcohol, but if he can't answer it, Ms. Heller, maybe Mr. Evans, or even the mayor can answer it. If you drew a perimeter line around Martin Tower site, in order for this development to go from where it is right this minute until the finished product, will the city be committing any resources in terms of building out infrastructure, sewers, streets, lights, anything at all within that perimeter?
I don't believe the city would have to provide any additional infrastructure beyond the footprint of the development itself. All the improvements, as would be required based on the reviews of plan development plans, I believe for the most part will be on site. There may be some traffic issues that have to be addressed off site, but beyond that, in terms of sanitary, stormwater, water service, those infrastructures are in place to support the development.
But like, if there's new sewers that need to line the roads, those are not being done by the city.
Correct.
Okay, thank you. So I too anticipated this letter with a lot of interest. I was hoping that the city would hear the urgency in our tone last meeting about sitting down with the developer and kind of hammering out something solid that we could react to, and unfortunately that did not occur. I read this letter extremely carefully, and I read it in conjunction with the comments from the EAC, the CAT, the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission, and I had a couple of comments. In terms of the feeling about the text amendments and the request for the increased parking between 8th Avenue, which our own city planning department did not support, and it's clear how the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission feels about it, I I have to say, I find it incredulous to believe that a medical user of these buildings is insisting on a one entrance only security standpoint for these buildings as justifying why this parking has to be engineered into the front of the building. This pandemic is new to us, but it certainly isn't permanent. And to the idea that we would build a building right now at the tail end of a pandemic that is like permanent and stuck in a one entrance standpoint, just to me, just it pushes the edges of my own credibility. The other things I wanted to talk about was the impervious coverage. The EIC wrote their 2019 letter, as referenced by Ms. Rothman last night, 2 years ago. And the developer has had 2 years to understand that this is a serious document. This is a city entity, the Environmental Advisory Council. And these are serious recommendations. And the idea explained under the impervious section coverage on page 3 out of 5 that it's not adding more because there already was concrete there from Martin Tower, to me also, it like strains my credibility. We're not looking at what was there. We're looking at what needs to be built and how do we protect our environment? How do we make the best decisions going forward? To offer the fact that there was already a whole lot of concrete on the space as a justification for continuing the same amount of concrete, again, to me, pushes my credibility. For the stormwater, I'd really like to see a professional environmental engineer assess these plans and say, are these plans adequate for stormwater runoff? Because one of the reasons we lost all the trees is because the site had to be regraded. So whatever was happening on Martin Tower's site prior to the demolition of the tower is no longer valid. We have new grading of this land, and we don't know exactly right now what the stormwater runoff situation is going to be, if that retention pond is adequate to protect Monocacy Creek. We just have the developer's word, and I would like something more firm in terms of data. And then the last thing was just the comments on affordable housing. The idea that continuing discussions is what the last sentence says. As noted by Mr. Wagner during the public hearing, the current intent is market rate housing. However, we will continue discussions with the administration and exhaust all available options. Continuing discussions to me sounds like the phrase thoughts and prayers. It's meaningless. And I was looking for something of substance in this letter. So, I would say that my overall impression from this letter was really seriously disappointed, and I'm hoping that the administration will take whatever opportunity is in front of us right now to sit down with the developer and take the points that were put out by all of these different entities about how do we fix this and make it better and not just justify that what was there was already, you know, the way it was, and so we should be pretty happy having that same amount of infrastructure, concrete, and impermeable surfaces. So that's all I have to say about it. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Dr. Benberg. Mr. Callahan?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would hope that we could at least try to take some of these things off the table one by one, so we can just narrow down what our real focus is here. As far as I'm going off of the letter that Mr. Ronca had sent to all of us in answer to the concerns that were brought up at our last meeting. So the, as far as I'm concerned, and I think everybody else would agree with this, as far as the trees and the plantings, the developer has already agreed on the site. I had a conversation with him after the meeting and asked about the trees, and from what I was told and explained, and it made a lot of sense to me, was that with the regrading of the property, a lot of the trees would have been damaged because the soil had changed, and some of the trunks would have been a foot or two under dirt. So the developer is assuring me and assured all of us in this letter that all the trees plus some will be breach landed on the site. So I would hope that at least we could all agree that with that promise that we could take the trees and the plantings off of the concerns. The second thing I was looking at was the stormwater retention. Ms. Heller, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
So the existing site that's been there all these years, did it have a retention pond or any type of stormwater runoff?
Well, I'm sure it had stormwater runoff. There's no retention pond that I know of on the site right now.
So,
but I'm sure that the stormwater requirements are different than right. They were when this building was first built.
Yeah, but when, I mean, the site that's been there for all these years, all the water ran into the Monocacy eventually, correct?
I don't know, it could have gone into the stormwater infrastructure that goes out into 8th Avenue or elsewhere. I have no idea. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, but there was no retention pond or any type of retention water that captured water coming off the site.
I don't believe there was a retention pond on the site. That's correct.
Okay. So from the drawings that he had proposed or offered us, there's now a substantial stormwater runoff area there that a majority of the site water will be running into. And I don't I'm asking you because I don't know all the details about this. And so it says in its current state, there's no detention basins or other features to provide rate control or water quality enhancements prior to the stormwater runoff reaching Monocacy Creek. And he says here, as part of the redevelopment, the rate control and water quality enhancement will be provided by way of a new stormwater detention basin that will reduce the current flow rate in the Monocacy and allow suspended solids to settle in the basin before stormwater is discharged into the Monocacy. So I would assume that the majority of that water from the property site now is running into the retention pond, and then it's being distributed according to the laws and environmental guidelines of today, correct?
Well, there is a detention pond proposed. There hasn't been any analysis of that stormwater plan yet. That still would be a part of the plan approval.
All right. So what is the item that he was referring to as far as a spray irrigation system that will recharge a portion of the basin stormwater through on-site irrigation? What is that?
You'd probably have to ask him that.
Mr. Rock?
Yes. So the spray irrigation system would effectively provide recharge of the two-year storm onto the existing surfaces, like in the wooded areas and what have you. So rather than allowing storm water to go directly from the pond to the stream, it's taken out of the pond, sprayed. Some will be sprayed around the apartment areas and the green areas, etc. And it allows the water to evaporate. It's a water quality measure.
All right, thank you. I think it's safe to say that the storm, prior to this, I would assume when we had massive storms, the water and all the debris that got caught up in the rainwater or the discharging of the water from the site, that all ran into the Monocacy.
Correct.
I would only assume that, right?
That's correct.
All right. So I think it's in the, what is it? What corner is the retention pond?
It's basically on the south, center south.
And that, I mean, I know this site is kind of like, it's graded in the middle, and it's always been that way because of the hills.
Correct.
So at least 50, a substantial amount of this, of the runoff is now going to a retention pond. What's the purpose of the retention pond? I mean, you see them in every development, but I would assume that's where the excess water flows, and then the water then can be controlled as far as the amount of flow into any waterways.
the detention basin is basically a big bladder. So the water's going to flow into the pond and be discharged out of a smaller orifice at the discharge point before it goes to the pond. So if there's a storm that went for 2 hours and filled the pond, the water may take, you know, 10 hours to leave rather than it all going directly to the stream in the same 2 hour period. It's rate control. It's slowing the flow to the Monocacy Creek. The other thing that it does is allow settling time for any suspended solids in the water to settle out and collect in the basin.
The third issue I wanted to try to clear up tonight was the walkability and the rails to trails. So, in the letter, Mr. Ronke, you're stating here that to promote and enhance walkability, you are proposing a new sidewalk connection from Eaton Avenue, Shannonville intersection. That's where, just for everybody knows, that's where the entrance to the mulch area is. If that's correct, is that right?
Yes.
All right. So you're gonna run a sidewalk connection down all the way down to the Burnside Plantation driveway.
That's correct.
All right. And then and you're gonna have a sidewalk connection to the Burnside Plantation, correct?
Correct. There's an existing connection point there now with a set of steps and what have you. We tie our sidewalks into that connecting point.
And then you say here that a perimeter walking trail starting at 8th Avenue and traveling along the south and east development limits. Where is that now? That's from 8th Avenue down to where?
So it would be at the southeast corner of the site where the C-Store gas station is, actually south of that, between that and the actual rail tracks, traveling east and then north all along the perimeter of the property. Not outside the wooded area, but the perimeter of the development area. And then it'll reconnect out to that first location where the sidewalk will be going down to the Burnside driveway.
All right. And then I forgot who wrote the letter for the trails and the biking path, but I think that gentleman was incorrect. And Mr. Ronke, you don't own that extension rail system that runs up past the old Durkee site where Lowe's is now, right?
Correct. And he was correct in his statement that our earlier plan showed a connection at that point. And back when that plan was generated, the city was hoping to acquire that portion of the rail lines from Norfolk Southern. Because that hasn't happened yet, and we're prepared to move forward, I can't show that connection on our plan, a connection to or even promote walking to lands that the city doesn't own and we don't own.
Ms. Carter, do you have a moment, please? I don't recall when, but I know that you had tried very diligently. I think you had talked about trying to acquire that area of the rail for the city. I think it was a few years we talked about it. And I think at the time you or someone, I don't know if it was a mayor or whoever it was, had stated that the discussions didn't go anywhere and the city does not own that property either, right?
Actually, that section of rail is something that Darlene may be better poised to speak about. We have not had any conversations with Norfolk Southern for that section under this administration. You may be confusing the section that connects the Hellertown Lower Sovereign Rail Trail, which we have had conversations on since I've been with the city. But Darlene, would you like to update council on that?
Sure. I can only recall conversations with Norfolk Southern about this western stretch of rail line would be under the prior administration. We had conversations with Norfolk Southern in a very comprehensive way to look at a few different sites in the city. They were not interested at that point in time in transferring this section of line, but that does go back at least 10 years, maybe 12 years. So yeah. Things can change, but at that time there was no interest.
So we don't own it, the city doesn't own it, Mr. Ronica doesn't own it, correct?
Correct.
Right. So, I mean, I think it's fair to say that right now, that discussion or that topic, I hope, could be resolved. We don't own it. Mr. Ronca doesn't own it. Mr. Ronca has already said that he is willing to enhance the walkability of the trail that's from his perimeter of the property line that borders the Monocacy Creek. He doesn't have to do that. I think it's a very generous offer. I appreciate that. I would hope that we could take the walkability of the rails and trails off of our list here of things to talk about. I'm not talking about the walkability as far as the 8th Avenue area, because that obviously has to be discussed. And I have some points to make on that also later. But on the Burnside Plantation, Mr. Ronca, you had submitted to us last week a 45 degree angle visual from the Burnside area. That's looking in what direction
that assumes you're standing on the Burnside property, let's call it between the existing barn and the existing two-story building, and you'd be looking up. It's about a 45 foot elevation difference, Burnside being lower. So you're not only looking uphill, but you're looking uphill and then at trees that are at the top of the hill that are much higher beyond that.
All right. And then, Ms. Carney, are you now aware, though, that Mr. Ronca has agreed to decertify to 3.5 acres for Chris?
That was included in the letter.
Yeah. I think 2 weeks ago you had said that you had discussions with me, but I didn't know what the acreage amount was.
So what I said 2 weeks ago was reiterating what the mayor's comments were, which was the ongoing conversations, which date back to probably 2015, about CRIS decertification. And, Mr. Rock has maintained the same approach, which has been, it's certainly something he's opened the conversation about.
Yeah, I may be wrong, but I don't think there was ever a determined amount of acres that he's going to give back to the city.
Mr. Ronca, would you prefer to comment here?
Well, yeah, I mean, this conversation has happened, I don't know how many times, with our monthly discussions with the administration, and the decertifying the CRIS happens on a parcel by parcel basis. I also have to deal with the CRIS component with each of the users on the site. So the immediate, as the subdivision occurs, the immediate ground would obviously be the area under the roads that can be decertified, because those clearly won't be CRIS. As the other transactions are solidified and we know what those tenants are demanding and what have you, those conversations can continue from there. So there is a process. There is also a process through the state to decertify. I'm not sure it's quite that simple to try and decertify 10 acres, 20 acres, 30 acres at one shot.
The other thing that I wanted to hit before I'll turn it over to Mr. Walden. Mr. Walden, I appreciate you giving me the time here. I drive, all of you know I have a driving school, and I worked, I not only work in that area all the time, I use that area to work on my turns for all my students. So I'm in that area constantly. And I also, I grew up in Cayman Avenue area. And we walked to Nitschman, and anybody that grew up in the Cayman Avenue area or lived in the west side that's walked to Nitschman, everybody knows that area is it's It's not Main Street. It's not Broad Street. It's an area that's, because of 378, that's very separated from the, you know, the rest of the community, other than the Catewin Avenue area. And when we were walking in Michigan for years, the only people, the only, if you drive by there, you don't have to take my word for it, but if you drive by there, it's not a pedestrian area. It really isn't. You're lucky if you find one or two people even walking around there at any time of the day. It's not an area where a lot of people walk to, because it is kind of a remote area. All the buildings around it already have, to the right, I don't know if that's heading north or whatever, have the same exact setback that the end user is now requesting from the developer. So I'm not sure putting, not giving this a look to allow the setback where all the other buildings are, like the St. Luke's building across the street, where the old Bank of America, or the old First Valley Bank was. That new building now has the setback that is being requested. Again, it's not a very walkable area. I'm not sure how not allowing the setback is going to make it any more walkable. I seriously doubt that. There was a pedestrian bridge that went over the entrances and ramps to 378. Not one kid from Nichman ever would use it, because you had to walk 100 yards up, 100 yards across, and 100 yards down, versus walking 10 feet across the 378 entrance on 8th Avenue. None of us ever walked on that side, ever. In fact, when it was demolished, I don't know if it was by PennDOT, I don't know who owns that spur, but I don't know if it's PennDOT or the city, but when they were redoing it, they completely knocked it down. It doesn't even exist anymore, which tells you, you know, the amount of walkability in that area. So I'm not, you know, I think what I'm trying to get down to is, what is this discussion really about? It's really about two rows of parking, in my eyes. It's two additional rows of parking that all of his neighbors already have. They already have it. And he's not asking for it, the end user is. And because the end user wants it for branding purposes, they want the frontage in the front. I don't know who had mentioned earlier about, it wasn't, I apologize, but all of the businesses in that area have only one entrance. All the St. Luke's buildings have one entrance. That's it. They don't have multiple entrances in the back or the sides. The St. Luke's, where the bank used to be, one entrance. They have the setback that's being requested. All the buildings to the right of that, heading north, have one entrance. The St. Luke's building where the oral surgery is has one entrance. It's facing 8th Avenue. CVS has one entrance facing 8th Avenue. So even the setback St. Luke's building that's behind CVS has it facing 8th Avenue, and they only have one entrance. So I think the argument can be made that the end user, whoever it may be, in whatever health network is going in there, is requesting something that everybody else has, and why they want it is. And I think the quickest way to break it down is, I think their thought is, if I'm paying rent, a leasing rent on Fifth Avenue, I don't want the back of my building butting up against Fifth Avenue. I'm paying for Fifth Avenue leasing space. I want my front and my brand and my signage facing 8th Avenue. Everybody knows where 8th Avenue is. I don't know what the name of the proposed road is in the back. So I think, you know, if it's Martin's Way or whatever it is, I'm not sure turning that building around and the back is now facing 8th Avenue. Now we have the dumpsters facing 8th Avenue. I mean, this whole thing to me comes down to $2.7 million in additional taxes coming into the city versus two rows. Just moving two rows of parking at the request of the end user from the back to the front so that their patients, primarily elderly people, can park there. that's basically what I think we're coming down to. I mean, once we had talked about the tree canopy, the stormwater runoff, the walkability and the trails in the back that Mr. Ronka said, he's going to, at his cost, is going to lengthen the sidewalk areas all the way down to Burnside, the view from Burnside, the trails that he doesn't own, that the railroad won't give up. I think what we really got to, hopefully narrow this down to is we got $700,000 in new city taxes. We got $1.2 or $1.3 million in school district taxes. And I think it was off the top of my head, I think it was an additional $600,000 in county taxes. So we're looking at $2.2 million in taxes. We raised taxes last year, council did, not I voted against it. 5% brought in $1.5 million. That's it. 5% increase brought in $1.5 million. That's according to Mr. Evans. We're looking at $2.2 million in additional revenue over basically moving two rows of parking from the back to the front. No more additional parking, just moving it because the end user is requiring it. And the end user has in their lease contract that they can walk if they don't get it. That's how important it is, though. And I would hope that we all put on our city council hats, because we have many obligations in many areas and many things that we have to think about. And I think one of the most important things is when we raise taxes on our taxpayers, that we all understand either walks. I don't know how long it would be before another end user shows up, and then obviously they have to go through a lot of legal wrangling and before it's now presented back to council. And I would only assume, I may be wrong, and if I am, I apologize, but I would only assume that a new end user, whoever that might be, 3, 4, 5 years down the road, would probably ask for the same thing, the frontage facing 8th Avenue. So I will yield to Mr. Waldron, President Waldron. I thank you for giving me the time, but I would like to just try to narrow this down to what are we really talking about, and let's get all the other things off the table that have already been addressed. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan. One sticking point that I think keeps coming up is parking, because specifically that's what's being asked of us. We have brought up some other concerns and some other priorities that we'd like to see included in the development. We cannot force the developer to do that. That's not our role. Unless we're willing to change what the zoning looks like on this site. One thing that did come up, though, is the setback. And I just wanted to clarify, maybe with Ms. Heller, what is being asked of us, obviously, is pretty simple, is understanding to push back the parking. But I don't believe the text amendment specifies those numbers specifically to say we're moving it back two rows specifically, no more, no less. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes, that's correct. The way the amendment is written, it asks that right now the way the wording is, it allows one row of parking and one driving aisle in front of the building. And the proposed amendment just removes that provision.
Right. So the verbiage may include, and obviously this is something that we'd want to get correct, is to allow specifically what is being asked of us on that site map that was proposed with that change of having more rows of parking. And I think somebody did float the idea that 2 weeks ago, if I remember, I think it was Mr. Callahan, bringing up the proposal of amending what's in front of us so that way we have that specific verbiage. And I think that's a pretty good idea that Mr. Callahan had, that we'd make that amendment so that way we are specifically giving what is being asked of us, and that is what is being asked of the developer by the end user on that corner there, the anchor tenant that is demanding this change that they think is necessary. I think if we are to proceed with this, that's at least the minimum change that I would like to see, and I'd be willing to support, is getting that verbiage correct so that way we are not giving carte blanche, if you will, to allow for as much space from the curb to the building. Obviously, I understand if we do make that amendment, that is considered a substantial amendment, and that would send everything back to planning and zoning, but I think, pardon me, not zoning, just the both planning commissions, but I think that's a consideration that we should take on this evening. Mr. Callahan?
I would also like to add, and I appreciate your comments about the parking. I don't remember how long ago it was, but one of the things I do want to address too is in Mr. Ronca's letter, he had mentioned that obviously impervious coverage versus what the lot was. And the other thing that he had stated in the letter is that obviously, and I think everybody understands this, if it was his preference, he would want less parking and more buildings, because the buildings are bringing in revenue, rent revenue, lease revenue, and he would prefer not to have as much parking. The parking is what is going to be ultimately required by the end users, and I don't know if Mr. Reynolds or Mr. Waldron, I think you were there because I was on council at the time. As you're going up 8th Avenue and you pass Eaton Avenue and you're heading towards Chandler Road, the first left-hand turn there after the St. Luke's Medical Building, there's the St. Luke's Medical Building, as you turn left, is on the left, and then on the right-hand side is Residence. And I can remember, I don't know how long ago it was again, but I remember, and I don't know what road that is, but I do remember that a lot of those residents, for numbers and number of city council meetings, came and complained that the patients that were going into that site were parking out on their street and taking up street parking. I don't know if you guys remember that or not, but I think it's I don't know if it's on here or not, what street it is, but it's that first brief. Mr. Rocco, you know what street that is? Where you turn left, the first left after passing the wing.
I believe it's Richards, I think.
Richards Street, yeah. And so I don't know if Mr. Waldron or Mr. Donchez, the mayor, or anybody else remembers, but there, that the end user at that site didn't have enough parking, and the overflow was going out into their streets, and they couldn't find off-street parking. So, parking is a difficult issue. I mean, it is, and I realize that. But I think if it was up to Mr. Rocket, he would prefer to have less parking and more buildings to generate the revenue. The parking, I guess, is either being required by the city or the end user. In this case, the end user, because of their, it's basically going to be a doctor's pavilion, from what I understand. There's going to be patients that are going to be coming in every day. Obviously, most of the people that are going there are probably going to be elderly. There's not enough parking in the front for them, and that's why they're requesting an extra two rows of parking in the front. So, I want to try to narrow the argument down to what are we really looking at versus the extra $2.2 or $2.4 million of taxes. Which, and I know that's not the end all, but on every development issue, but it is a significant amount of money, a substantial amount of money for the city taxpayers to not consider allowing the end user to have the two additional parking rows in the front of the building. So I'm not sure the end user would even want to turn the building around and have the frontage facing this Martin's Way or whatever it is. And if they did, we now have the garbage dumpsters in the back of the building facing 8th Avenue. I just don't see the walkability increasing or decreasing because of the extra setback of two rows of parking. And I would ask everybody to respectfully consider that as we think about the amount of tax revenue being generated here and the very, very small impact that it might So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan. I just want to make a fine point too. The idea of impervious coverage is equal whether it's a parking spot or the roof of a building. So the question obviously is impervious coverage, and we're not trying to replace a parking spot with more building. We're trying to replace that impervious coverage with more green space. Dr. Van Wert?
This is just very quick. I think it's really important that we're precise here in what we're speaking about. And when we break down the post-development projected assessment and tax services, the amount the city will receive if this project is fully built out per annum is $577,000 a year. It's not $2.7 million, which is there. The other remainder goes to the county, and the final remainder goes to the school system to offset the increased cost of having school children there. So, you know, when we had the parking authority contributing $500,000 a year to the general fund, and suddenly they decided to stop doing it, nobody said boo about it. But now we have a development that has a projected annual addition to our general fund of $577,000 a year, and it's like the second coming of God. So I just want to be very clear about what the numbers that we're talking about in terms of our general fund and where the rest of it is going. Thank you.
I saw Mr. Colon, you had your hand up first.
Thank you, President Waldron. Just a couple comments and then a couple questions for Mr. Ronca in a moment. So thanks for your point before, Mr. Waldron, about the looking at deleting the line where it talks about limiting one driving aisle and one row of parking spaces. I said at the last meeting, in terms of what is in front of us to vote on, adding the four-way up there by CVS, I'm comfortable with that as it reads, with the reducing the rear yard setback from 30 feet to 20 feet. I'm comfortable with that. My question to the last meeting that I touched on, just kind of expanding on what you were talking about, Mr. Waldron, what we're talking about, though, and I'll get to my questions in a moment, about what's proposed for the site. But what we're voting on, to Mr. Callahan's point of holding things up for an additional aisle, a driving aisle, row of parking, but that's not what the amendment reads. The amendment reads to allow, and I know it's not proposed for this specific project, but it's for that zoning district would be. So that's where I am of not necessarily comfortable with the idea of deleting the entire line prescribing the need for one driving aisle and one row of parking to leave it up to, I mean, it could potentially be anything, even though I know that's not specific to this plan. That is how the zoning would be changed to read. A question for, well, Ms. Heller first, Ms. Heller's there. If council were to make an amendment tonight or at a future meeting to what's in front of us with these text amendments. I know Mr. Waldron said that would go back to both the Bethlehem Planning Commission and the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission for their input. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
And then what kind of timeline, I mean, ballpark it, not to hold you to that, but just to give us all an idea of what the dominoes are if we were to make any amendments. What are we looking at until we're back again before council? Are we talking, well, will you tell us roughly what would it be?
Well, the Planning Commission and the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission each meet monthly, so that's at least 30 days, maybe 45 days, depending on the calendar. And actually, your city clerk could maybe answer more, but before another public hearing could be held, there'd have to be an advertisement, and there is a time period for that. So I would add another 30 days for that. So to get back to another public hearing, it's probably 60 days, maybe 70 days.
Thank you, Ms. Heller. But Mr. Waldron, mm-hmm. I'll expect Mr. Bodoni, if he does have any additional comments he wants to make regarding that timeline.
That's a realistic timeline.
Understood. Thank you, Mr. Bodoni.
And then turning to Mr. Ronca, Mr. Ronca, I know we heard, and Reagan, I appreciate your letter. I appreciate just the development of the site. But just as we go through this process a little bit, I know the user who you're in negotiations with for leasing this building is saying that the one lane of parking, the one traffic aisle, it isn't going to work for them. Are they asking for specifically the two? Would two hypothetically work for them? Is that something that's been discussed? Is that something that has not been discussed?
Well, bear in mind that these lots are only so large, the building can only move so far. So if you look at the, I don't know if you have the plan in front of you, but if you're looking at the corner lot, the most that building could move would probably be to take the rear row of parking and move that to the front of the building. Now, you wouldn't do that because that's where the drop-off aisle is. Do you have that plan in front of you, Mr. Colon?
I do.
So if you're, let me see which one you have.
I'm looking at.
Yes. So if you can see on the left-hand side of your page, which was, let's call it the in compliance drawing. And before I get to that, let's realize that we have an entrance on Eaton Avenue. Right in, right out. We have an entrance at the main driveway, the new driveway, the east leg. And there are also two entrances on Tower Drive. So now we're going to take traffic at each of these buildings, for that matter, because their buildings, they want their buildings facing 8th Avenue. Now we're going to take traffic from all these directions and funnel them to a single drive aisle up along the street. People being dropped off. No circulation around there, no way to take a second aisle like when you go to your typical department store or what have you. You're now stuck. So if you move over to the right side of the page, at the corner building, you'll see there's a single row up along the street, a double row, and then you have a very large drop-off canopy area. Because of the size of the lot and the depth of the lot, as I indicated in my letter, the internal road structure is effectively fixed at this point. So the most that building could move back would be you couldn't even move a double row because you just can't do odd rows, let's put it that way. So, the most that could happen there would be the building would be moved back another 18 feet with parking in front of it, but that would create a parking deficiency, so we wouldn't be doing that. On the smaller building, that could probably move back an extra double row and have that double row out front. That's the extent of movement on these lots. Even if you push them all the way back, for that matter, and had a drive aisle, I mean, you're literally talking about moving them back somewhere between 60 and 80 feet at that point.
So, Mr. Ronca, in your request for the text amendment, why was there any, and the reason might just be, I don't know, you tell me, what was the genesis for just deleting the language that relates to limiting one driving aisle, one row of parking, as opposed to just asking for two driving aisles and two rows of parking?
Frankly, if you go to the ordinance, if you go to that section of the ordinance of parking, you'll find multiple areas in there where the item does not apply to the OMU. There's at least five or six of them there. I can't off the top of my head tell you what they are, but they are requirements in other zones that from day one did not apply to the OMU zone. So the simplest change was it doesn't apply in the OMU zone for this item. I mean, if we look at the driveway, now we understand, or I think it's understood, that the purpose of the requirement in 1108B, I believe it is, that says no new driveways unless you can prove to the satisfaction of the planning board or whomever that rear alleys and other access points can't be accomplished is a safety issue. You don't want you don't want multiple driveways coming out on an arterial street, like five houses coming out on an arterial street could create a dangerous situation. Well, the signalized intersection is the safest location you can create to exit and enter a piece of property. So my point being is the ordinance isn't perfect in that I should even be asking for, in fact, I don't know if they had to ask for it across the street when they put it in. The ordinance isn't perfect. That item shouldn't even have to be asked for, because that's not the condition that the provision in the ordinance is meant to protect against. So again, there are many other guidelines, or whatever we want to call them, ordinance sections in the parking regulations that do not apply in the OMU zone. So the simplest and most the buildings can only move so far. So we did not see it as any reason to whatever two drive aisles and two parking lanes or whatever. We just didn't need to apply. And to the point of the walkability and what have you, we have two medical buildings here. There's eight other medical buildings around here. We have a grocery store in here. We have a grocery store across the street. Ours are going to be no less walkable than every other building here. In fact, probably still more walkable, frankly.
And then, Mr. Ronka, last question. I appreciate all the feedback.
Sure.
Relating to the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission memo that we received that our city clerk read into the record at the beginning of the meeting, can you just speak to, I think it was touched on at the public hearing, but just to reiterate, it talks about the Planning Commission makes mention of going before the Zoning Hearing Board rather than text amendments. Can you just speak to the thought process behind this course of action as opposed to going before the Zoning Hearing Board?
Sure. As we sit here today, my grocery user is not signed. I believe I'm going to have them. I have two others that are interested in the site. Each of these operators have their own specific prototypical buildings, prototypical parking requirements, etc., etc. So if I get a variance for this and this doesn't get in and I have to bring another user here, I'm going to come back and have the same issue, but I have to go back for another variance. If the hospital, between now and the time we build, decides that they're going to reconfigure that building, could be a similar situation. So I'm going to go get a variance for a specific plan, and somebody's going to tell me it no longer complies because the plan changed. That is ludicrous. That is an undue burden that, again, we'll just be caught in a loop here. This is not an easy project. We've got 50 acres here, 40 developable, and items here are going to be interchangeable. It just is what it is. I'm never going to have 10 uses solidified at the same time. Again, the buildings can only move so far on the lots.
Understood. Thank you for your comments related to my questions, Mr. Ronka. The last comment I have, Mr. Waldron, before I turn it over to other members of council, is that I just want to point out in the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission's memo, they make reference to the amendments would result in suburban scale development patterns. I know there were four of us were not on council at the time. I just want to make mention that a previous council member during the previous public hearings when this zoning amendment had passed, I guess that would have been December of 2015, my memory serves me correctly, said exactly that the zoning ordinance as it was being voted on, their concern was that it was creating more urban sprawl and a suburban situation, what would be more typical of a suburban development situation. And here we are all these years later, and it's ironic how a few years change things. But those are my comments. Thank you for your feedback again, Mr. Ronka. Thank you for the time, Mr. Waldron.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith.
Thank you. And thank you for all the wonderful comments and great dialogue we've had thus far. I have a couple questions for Mr. Ronka and some comments. I guess it seems like the one bone of contention amongst others is the parking amendment. OK, Okay. It seems like the other two amendments, everybody's pretty much, well, not everybody, but I mean the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission and the City Planning Commission are recommending those, but they both do not recommend the parking amendment. And I guess I just need to clarify, because my understanding is that you're asking for those amendments because it was an agreement between the proposed tenant of the buildings, that they want the front of the building to face 8th Avenue, I'm assuming for address purposes, as well as have their logo and the parking in the front. But I'm a little confused because I go to the doctor across the street, who is on the corner of Eaton Avenue and Shanersville, and their address is Eaton Avenue, even though the front of the building, the entrance to the building, is in the back of Eaton Avenue. I went to another doctor last week who was a part of Lehigh Valley Health Network, and they are on the corner of Tillman and Houseman, but they are really far in on a little road that is off of Luther Crest that is trivially be called like a court, but it is, the address is Houseman Road. And again, the entrance does not face Houseman or Tillman Street, and the main entrance is, again, not on either of those main thoroughfares, but their address is Houseman Road. So I guess I'm confused as to why there's an issue that the tenant must have the building and the front of it facing Martin, facing 8th Avenue, to have an address for 8th Avenue, when several other medical buildings do not face the main street but have that address.
I cannot answer your question with any, I'm not in their office. If it were me, or let me say it differently, to me, it doesn't necessarily matter. If they were okay with the buildings in compliance with the ordinance, we wouldn't be having this conversation. It does nothing for me. It's their requirement. My lease document literally has a termination provision that if they're not able to site the buildings in accordance with the plan, they can terminate. And they likely will terminate. And look, anybody on this call is more than welcome to speak to them and ask that question directly. I'm not here telling a story. I have no reason to want it one way or the other. It is their requirement, not mine. And to Ms. Dr. Van Wert's comment, it's not that the building will have only one entrance, it will have a main entrance, it will obviously have many exits to comply with safety and what have you, but it will have a single entrance. Like, I can't think of a medical building that doesn't have one, unless you're going to a hospital that's a sprawling complex. But any medical building I've gone to, there's a main entrance you go into, you see the reception area, it's controlled. After you get through the reception area, they take you in the back, take your blood or an MRI or whatever else is going to happen.
Well, that leads me to another question. I understand that, and thank you. But I guess I'm also thinking, you have that in your agreement that it's a condition for termination of their agreement with you if they cannot have the entrance in the front facing 8th Avenue. So I guess I'm wondering, why would you even do that, knowing that you need a variance, and the variance is not definite?
Frankly, I can't believe this has turned into the issue that it has. We have buildings up and down this corridor that are all set back. This provision, in my opinion, is somewhat of a left of a hangover requirement when we had the third downtown concept that nobody wanted. Unfortunately, when the ordinance got changed to get rid of that, to keep the entire downtown community happy, this item still hung around. Again, I can't believe it's this much of an issue. I don't know why every other building on this corridor can be set back, and my three, literally, well, it's almost two, because the grocery, literally, the only thing this change does for the grocery on this plan is literally provide me the six handicapped parking spaces adjacent to the building. Again, a prototype building designed and provided by the user. But that's all that does for the grocery. I would hope that's as de minimis as anything you could possibly talk about. So we're literally talking about two buildings here. I cannot, for the life of me, believe we are having the magnitude of conversation on this item. I would have never believed it would be this much of an issue.
Honest
as I can give it to you.
Okay, thank you. And I hear what you're saying, but the bottom line is, right now, the way the zoning is written, you need a variance to get this parking to change to meet the requirements for the desire of the tenant. And I guess what I'm saying is, you know, instead of coming after us, like, why can't this just happen? Why are you not realizing that you need a variance? So why did you even go into this type of agreement until you got the variance and knew it would happen? That's, I guess, my train of thought here. But nonetheless, I guess that's enough about that issue, because that certainly is an issue that is a bone of contention. The other thing I guess I still have questions about is the stormwater runoff, because again, I think about, you know, we just passed the climate action plan where we're really looking to make sure that, you know, any future development is going to be as green as possible. And we also imposed a stormwater fee, which I was very involved with and was very, you know, not too happy that we had to do it during the pandemic, but we had to because of state and federal requirements. And I guess I'm just wondering, how can we get some kind of more guarantee that the retention pond is going to be enough to prevent stormwater runoff into the Monocacy? Is there a way we can get that guarantee? Can we have, as Dr. Van Wart said, maybe an environmental engineer come in and do some kind of, you know, evaluation that they can tell us what it is going to look like with the retention pond?
The short answer is no, simply because the detention bond will not preclude stormwater from going to the Monocacy Creek. The pond will slow down the rate of flow to the Monocacy Creek, but it does not, it never could alleviate 100% of the flow to the Monocacy Creek, if that's your question.
Yes, it is. That is my question. So is that your answer, that it will not eliminate 100% of the runoff?
There's nothing that I could do that would accomplish that goal.
Okay. All right, I guess my only other question, again, this is not, and again, I understand, you know, the only thing that we really have to vote on is the three variants. And the first two, I mean, I really am fine with. The parking, I have some issues with. But I guess I'm just going to ask this again. It may not even be relevant, but I'm just going to ask this for my own curiosity. Why would you not consider doing some level of affordable housing for middle income, knowing that it is the buzzword in our city, in our state, in our country right now, that we have a crisis, and it's something that, you know, can help to eliminate the crisis somewhat?
Awesome. While I appreciate the initiative, I think everybody needs to realize we have literally the most expensive ground anywhere in the Lehigh Valley, probably times 10, between our acquisition, remediation, demolition, site cleanup, etc. I think Ms. Carter can tell you that we had the conversation. She has met with Dwayne, or at least gotten on the phone with Dwayne several times to discuss what options are there. And they were, I assume, still in the middle of those conversations, but I cannot sit here today and tell you that I can afford to do affordable housing here. Our pro rata land cost on the residential component is twice what it can be sold for on the market. I wouldn't know how to further burden that component, financially burden it.
So it would be like a financial burden, is that what you're saying, to do affordable at this point?
Correct. I'm not saying we're not willing to entertain it. They're having discussions about other incentives and what have you, or whatever else is going on in other parts of the city, but this is a very expensive piece of ground.
All right, thank you. I appreciate it. Okay, that's all the questions I have. President Waldron, I feel that, and as Mr. Ronka said in his letter, this is a very complicated project with a laundry list of concerns. I think it does require, as he said in his letter, and I appreciate this, cooperation and compromise by all concerned parties. And I don't think that I'm convinced that really, enough of that cooperation and compromise has happened, that this can be the development that we would all like it to be. And I think there's several unresolved issues that have been highlighted by the numerous letters that we received to City Council and the administration, as well as the numerous phone calls that we received tonight from the concerned citizens, which I appreciate their input. Plus, the agenda was just updated this afternoon to include the letter from the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission with their comments on the Martin Tower plan. And that being the case, given all these factors, I'm going to make a motion that we delay the vote on this until our next council meeting, so it will give us and the administration and Mr. Ronka time that we can look into more of these unresolved issues and truly try to do the cooperation and compromise that is necessary. So I make a motion we delay the vote until the next council meeting on the amendments.
Can we finish comments with everybody before we do that?
You need a second to the motion before anything else. There's a motion on the floor, you need a second.
Does that shut down comments though?
Yes.
I'll second the motion.
Okay. No, because it's a motion to postpone and not a motion to table, a motion to postpone to a future date is debatable. So there's now been a motion and a second.
Do you have a comment on the proposal to postpone 2 weeks, Mr. Callahan?
I just wanted to make a couple additional comments on the issue.
Comments specifically on that motion to postpone?
I have a point of reference to Mr. Spurk. Mr. Spurk, if we pass this to postpone, which I would be in favor of, does that stop us from having other discussions on this topic tonight?
Well, you always have new business, Mr. Callahan, but you wouldn't be discussing it right at this point of the meeting.
You broke up, I'm sorry.
I said that would have to wait for new business.
Okay.
Once the motion would pass, if it passes, you wouldn't be able to discuss it more now. You would have to reserve that to new business if the motion passes.
I can wait to new business, or we can do it now, and or it doesn't matter to me if I do it now or during new business. So whatever the preference of Ms. Cramsey Smith is.
I defer to the President
Walter. So it seems like there might be still some conversation that we'd like to have on this topic. Not every member of council has had the opportunity to weigh in yet as well. And I do have the idea of a potential amendment. And I don't know how long that would take potentially to get that in writing, whether 2 weeks is enough time to do that or not. Or the consideration would be, to push that even longer. I don't want to rush the process and that we come back in 2 weeks again and say, all right, here we go. Do we have everything in order? I think it's important that we get this right and do it the first time as cleanly as possible, so that way we don't feel like we're on an artificial timeline to get this done as soon as possible, as if there's a year-end goal that we need to meet. And with the potential of an amendment, it would trigger the whole process over again regardless. So, I mean, Ms. Cramsey Smith, if you're willing to pull your motion, I still think I would support that motion this evening, but I think it might make sense to conclude our conversation and let everybody have a chance to weigh in, and then at the end of that dialogue, repropose that amendment, whether it's 2 weeks or 4 weeks out, and then take a vote on that and then continue with our agenda this evening. So are you willing to do that, to withdraw that motion?
Yeah, absolutely. I will withdraw that motion.
Thank you. And I will give you that opportunity to make that motion again after we conclude our dialogue on this. I saw Ms. Negron, you were looking to make comment.
Yes, I was actually going to say that I wanted to speak before, but I was okay in just passing the motion, and my comments could have been at the end of the meeting in new businesses.
I think it makes sense that we focus on this topic at hand, because we don't have much to do after this, but I think it makes sense to stay with what we're discussing. So go ahead, Ms. Negron.
So I really appreciated the feedback that I got from my council members here, especially Francis Smith and Dr. Van Wert. I really, like they stated, especially Ms. Francis Smith, the issue of housing, and we heard a lot of members of our community talking about it. It's something pretty simple. I still think about what Ms. Delia Marrero, I think it was, mentioned. In order for individuals to be able to pay for market rate, they have to be making $34 an hour. $34 an hour. And I know that in the letter you closed by saying that this construction will create hundreds of construction and permanent jobs. And, you know, great. Are they going to be paying $34 an hour? Because those are going to be the only ones that are going to be able to live in that market rate place. You know, there are hundreds of jobs, especially under the hospitals, you know, Lehigh Valley Hospital and St. Luke's. And none of them, most of them, except the doctors, you know, and I know my daughter is one, it's under $20 an hour. And under $20 an hour cannot afford marketplace rent. And that's what affordable housing is for. It's for the working people. And we have thousands of working people in the Lehigh Valley that have no place to live because market rate rental, you have to be making 34. And if you're going to have jobs in there that are going to be $34 an hour, let me know, because I'm quitting my job and I'm going to go work there, because I do not make $34 an hour. And that's why, and I said this many times in the last 4 years, I was looking to sell my house and rent a house, an apartment in the South Side, and I couldn't afford it because it is market rate, and I'm not making still today $34 an hour. And that is the only way to live in a market rate apartment. So, you know, I'm not talking about, you know, just give us rent free. We're talking about the people that are going to be working in all of those hundreds of jobs that are going to be created in there. Where are they going to live? Where are they going to live? Because there's nowhere in Bethlehem that, you know, it's creating those places for those individuals that are making $20 an hour or less. And, you know, all of these warehouses, how many do we have? We have hundreds of people working, thousands. I deal with them every day. They're making the top is $17 an hour. None of them have a place to live that is a decent place because everything is market rate. And in order for you to pay for a market rate, you have to pay $34 an hour. We are not getting that. That is all I'm asking. Thank you.
Mr. Callahan?
Just a couple quick points. As far as the taxes are concerned, which, you know, this is a huge issue to me. I don't know if it is to some of the other people on council, but the city taxes, as Dr. Van Wert had said, she is correct. $693 a year in taxes, in city taxes. When this is complete, it's $577,000. That's an increase of $567,000 to the city coffers. We just raised taxes, or council did, not I, 5%, which brought in $1.5 million. I don't know, Mr. Civic, if I'm wrong with my calculations, but a $567,000 increase in tax revenue to the city equals 1.8% tax increase. So this money being generated by the development of this property is equal to a 1.8% tax increase, if my calculations are correct. That is an enormous amount of money to city taxpayers. I know Dr. Van Wert, you can afford those tax increases, but as Olga Negron had said, or Ms. Negron had said, there's people that can't afford it. And every time we raise taxes, that money makes Bethlehem, that increase makes Bethlehem less affordable. The affordable housing crisis is real. I proposed a couple of meetings ago to take $5 million of the federal stimulus money out of the $33 million that we got and put it towards affordable housing. I would hope that, and I got no responses from anybody on council. We will never have this windfall of money ever again from the federal government. I've never heard of such an amount of money coming in. And it's because of the crisis that we have with the pandemic. But I am proposing, again, $5 million of that federal stimulus money, the $33 million, to go to affordable housing. On top of that, we have a big vote coming up on a topic that some of the callers have called in tonight. The developer on the South Side, to do, propose 10% of affordable housing, and that got shot down 5-0 by the historical board. that is something that we are going to have to address as council members, because that is that vote is going to be very important, and is going to be it's going to put a lot of us in a position where we have to put our money where our mouths are. I'm willing to put $5 million of that federal stimulus money towards affordable housing, and we also have to vote for whether or not a developer, and I think all of them will tell you the same thing. You can't have affordable housing without density and without height. You can't. And we have a developer over on the south side who's already proposed having 10%, putting 10%, and that got shot down. So I don't know where the expectation is for these developers. I mean, the bar seems to keep moving. And so that one point, that $567,000, that city money, 1.8% tax increase, that's not including the $1.7 million to the school district, which is primarily all city taxpayers. So, you know, I understand if you don't want to count the county money, because Bethlehem is a small part of the county, but the Bethlehem Area School District, $1.7 million in additional tax revenue. They're paying, that site's paying right now $32,964 a year in taxes. When it's done, they will be paying $1.748 million a year in taxes. That's just the school district. And then on top of that, the city gets $567,000. That's an enormous amount of money. That's over $2 million. I now have to fork over, whether it's city taxes or school district taxes, over two lanes of parking. I think that's what it basically comes down to. As far as the impervious coverage, it's my last comment. I'm not sure that I had talked to a good friend of mine who owns a paving business, and I asked him, do they make impervious blacktop? And his question was, yes, they do. I thought, great, awesome. He goes, they don't use it that much around here. I said, why? The reason why is because impervious blacktop. If I said impervious, I apologize. Impervious blacktop is not used that often around here because this area is known throughout the Holy Eye Valley for sinkholes. And when you have pervious coverage in the blacktop, the water drains through the ground, and then you have sinkholes. And that's why they don't use it here. So I think Mr. Alcohol can address that better than I can as far as the amount of sinkholes in our area. I do know that maybe a couple of years ago on New Street, we had a huge sinkhole problem. And I think there was two houses or three houses that basically got demolished from it. So it is an issue that has to be addressed and has to be looked at. And I think that's one of the reasons, according to the blacktop individual I talked to, who's, you know, a pretty big a blacktop installer, says it's not used a lot in this area due to the amount of sinkholes in this area due to limestone. So I appreciate it. And I thank Councilman Grace Cramsey Smith for letting us have this extra discussion. Thank you.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
She's muted.
Ms. Cramsey Smith, you're on mute.
I'm sorry, thank you. I just want to respond and clarify to Councilman Callahan's comments. I think that I can speak for all of us, and I'll speak for me if not, that nobody wants to ever raise taxes, especially during a pandemic. You know, again, I grew up as a free reduced lunch student. I have been on my own, you know, for the last couple of years supporting my three kids. I know what it's like to really struggle financially. That's probably why I'm such an advocate for those that are oppressed and the need for affordable housing. And it doesn't matter where any of us are at as far as our income goes. What we're looking at here is, you know, certainly we need to look at development to increase our tax base. But the way I see it here, black and white simply, is, you know, we're not going to approve of a development project just because it's going to bring taxes in. We have a proposal here where we have to vote on changing, amending the law And that's what the bottom line is. We have to vote our conscience, and as council people here representing the citizens of this city, and we heard many of them call in tonight, not in favor of us changing the law as it is. So the bottom line is, we're here to vote on changing the law, not to vote on changing the law just because we want to get increase our tax base in this city. Thank you.
Mr. Callahan?
I would just add that we are not making this decision also in a vacuum. There are real consequences if the end user leaves, which is a possibility. And if we vote against this and it doesn't go through and the end user walks away, everybody, maybe the taxpayers, you know, we had 20 callers call tonight. Maybe the taxpayers will say, you know what? We don't need the 2 point. We'd rather have our taxes raised over that two extra rows of parking. I don't know. I think the taxpayers of the city of Bethlehem, if they drive by this and see where the existing buildings already are, would think that we were a little off in our judgment by not allowing this and taking the chance of the end user walking away, which I hope does not happen. But you know, it's a lot of money. Is the whole thing about tax dollars? No, it's not. But when you look at the small ask on the end user's end of what their requirement is, not the developer, what the end user is asking for, the chance of them walking away from this is substantial. And I think all of us will have to answer for whether it was the right decision or not. So again, I'm all for the affordable housing, and I would hope everybody on this council would agree or support me in when we do have the discussion of moving the $5 million to the affordable housing problem in our city. And I think that's it's going to be upon us when the vote comes for the new building on the south side on New Street, where the developer did propose to put already 10% of affordable housing in there. Let's see how we all vote on that. I mean, these guys are trying to help the city out. And I think the ask of the end user on this site is not that great of an ask compared to the fact we have the same exact setback that they're already asking for. I think it's probably fair to say, and Councilman Ramsey Smith, I talked to you about this today, it's actually something that we probably should have addressed when we rezoned the property many years ago, but we didn't. So it's on us now to fix. That's the way I look at it. But I appreciate everybody's comments, and Mr. Walden, I thank you for the time tonight. Thank you.
Are there any other additional comments from members of the council before I turn back to Ms. Ramsey Smith about her motion? I guess, I'm sorry, Mr. Clone, go ahead.
Thank you, President Waldron. Just one last question from Mr. Ronca, if I may. Mr. Ronca, I appreciate your, you know, being so frank about what the request is of those that you're in negotiation with for these two buildings. Can I ask you, are you working under any kind of timeline?
Of course. Of course we are. We're working under a timeline at everyone, and I'm not going to lie to you. At least three of our users have questioned what is happening, why, and is the project going to move forward? These people work on, you know, multiple deals at a time. If there's something that looks like it's not going to happen, they're going to move on. Like I said, it's been a long road.
Thank you, Mr. Rocker. That was it.
And I appreciate the question, because it's, you know, one of the things that was going through my head is, does everybody realize that the people we're dealing with all have time frames, and they have programming items to accomplish, and you know, they're all spending time and money. Now they're sitting there wondering what's happening. So it's a good question. I appreciate the question.
Ramsey-Smith.
She's on mute again.
I'm sorry, I have a... I'm willing to reintroduce my motion, but did you want to speak about some more parameters to the amendment, President Waldron, or do you want me to go right to the motion?
I would just ask, you know, if we are making an amendment, or pardon me, if we're making a motion to postpone for 2 weeks, what is the purpose of that? What is your thought on that?
Well, my thought is, as I said, I think there's a lot of unresolved issues. It's a complicated matter, and I think that I would hope that the Mr. Ronk and the city can have some more dialogue and try to come up with some resolution. I mean, for example, just with the variance for the parking, it's unlimited. You know, we have the parking authority and the planning commission are both not recommending it, because one of the issues is that it's unlimited as far as the number of parking lanes and driving aisles. So perhaps that could be something that can be looked at. I know some people brought that up tonight. The stormwater issue, you know, that's another issue that is not resolved. So I am just saying that there's a lot more, there's more questions than answers in my mind, and I would like to take more time to have some of these issues resolved.
Well, I'm unsure as to how the stormwater, and I don't mean this in the wrong way, so don't take it the wrong way. The stormwater is a planning issue, it's a DEP issue, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not sure how the stormwater, I mean, I answered a whole bunch of, or I tried to respond to a whole bunch of questions or comments that, frankly, I don't believe have any bearing whatsoever on the requested amendment, but of course I wanted to provide the responses that I could. But I don't know how the stormwater issue would be something for a council to be addressing. We're not asking for a variance, we're asking to modify the provisions of the zone so we have flexibility simply on the parking. And it only affects, or it only concerns those frontage lots. As I said, so we're talking about the two medical buildings, literally the two medical buildings and the grocery store at this point. That's really all it affects. That doesn't affect the internal lots, it only has to do with the arterial street. And those lots are only so big, those buildings can only move so far.
And I'm aware of that. And I'm aware also that, you know, our only control right now is voting on the three variances that are in front of us. But I think as everyone heard tonight, there are a lot of concerns from our citizens regarding environmental issues, especially the stormwater runoff. That's why I brought that up. So I was hoping that perhaps that's something that can be looked into further to appease the concerns of all the citizens that called in tonight and all the citizens and entities that have emailed this over the last couple of weeks.
Well, and I guess what I'm trying to say is I wouldn't know how to begin to appease anybody. The site has to be designed in total. The stormwater system has to be designed in total. Appease them how? What would you ask me to do to appease them?
Well, I think that if we were listening tonight to the people that called in, especially when we reference our climate action plan, we want to do everything we can to avoid any runoff into our watersheds, into our creek, into the Monocacy.
Well, I don't think anyone expected that there would be no runoff to the Monocacy. They've asked what controls will be in place. I don't believe anybody in any of these letters has suggested that there should be not a drop of water coming off our site and reaching the Monocacy. So they're just asking to ensure that there will be controls for that. And I've already represented that there will be controls for that. We show the detention basin on the plan.
So that's a dead issue, apparently, the stormwater runoff, but we still have the issue with the parking. So I'm going to make a motion again, because I think there's many unresolved issues, and again, especially since our agenda was just revised this afternoon to include more information regarding this development, I'm going to make a motion that we delay this vote.
Ms. Crimson,
I second.
Ms. Crimson Smith, I think for a motion to postpone, we need to pick a specific date. So if you're looking at your calendar, typically we're first and third Tuesday, but because of the primary election, that gets pushed to the Wednesday. So the question is, do you intend to push to the Wednesday after the primary election, or the first meeting in June?
And the first meeting in June would be June 1st, I believe. And so I'm going to make the motion to push it until June 1st.
Postpone.
I'll second.
The verbiage is postpone, if you don't mind. Thank you.
And to delay until June 1st.
Motion by Ms. Cramsey Smith, second by Ms. Negron. Mr. Callahan, do you have a comment on the motion? Mr. Callahan, do you have a comment on the motion?
I do. I would be in favor of it. I think it also will give us a little bit more time to look at the issues that are still on the table. And I think that it also would give us an opportunity to reach out to taxpayers. I mean, we definitely had a representative tonight, or several representatives, about the environment and the stormwater runoff. I think the extra 2 weeks I think it'd be a month now until the final vote. I think that would give us time to get some feedback from taxpayers, from regular taxpayers, from people in the surrounding neighborhood, and also from the school district. I think this vote that we take is going to have an impact on a lot of different entities other than some of the ones that called tonight. So I think that we're looking at a substantial amount of taxpayer money and tax increases if this doesn't go through. And I think it's fair to say what Mr. Evans, in his response to Mr. Waldron's question during a few months ago, that the city needs to bring in an extra $2 million a year to balance our budgets. And if we don't, I mean, there's no question that this is probably the largest development project in the city of Evans, without a doubt. Next to the Sands, it's probably number two. And I think it's really important for the people who really believe in affordable housing to look at this, because I think it's fair to say the number one reason, basically a supply and demand. Right now we have an affordable housing crisis throughout the United States, because I think that a lot of construction stopped during the pandemic. And because of that, there's a huge shortage right now. The only way you bring down prices is you increase the amount of housing stock.
Mr. Callahan, can I get you to focus on the motion that is on the table?
Thank you. So I would agree with this, and I'll support it. And again, I think it's going to give us some time to hear from the school district and other entities about where they are on this. So I will support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other comments on the motion, Mr. Colon?
Thank you, President Waldron. Just for the purposes of understanding the timeline, earlier I asked Ms. Heller and Mr. Bodoni about the process. If it's amended, June 1st is our first reading. If we have amendments on June 1st and we vote to amend it, we're still looking at a second reading before it would go back to the, I guess my question is, if we amend and vote on it once, it still has to be voted on a second time before it would get kicked back to planning, the City Planning Commission, Lehigh Valley Planning Commission, correct? One, passing it through once, would that trigger that?
I think so. I don't believe it would take two readings to do that.
So voting on it, so amending it and passing the amendment one time would then take it out of council and kick it back to planning.
Right, because we'd only be passing the amendment, we wouldn't actually be passing the ordinance.
Understood. Just for my own sake, keeping things in order. Thank you, Mr. Walter.
Any other comments on the motion?
So you'd be passing an amendment.
If there was to be an amendment.
How much further beyond that then?
If there was to be an amendment, or if there was for the text ordinance to pass. The timeline is up in the air because we don't know what the next step will be.
I think assuming...
Are there any other comments from members of council on the motion? If the clerk would please call the roll on the motion to postpone until January 1st. June 1st. Thank you.
Mr. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Thank you for joining us this evening. We'll continue on with our agenda, Resolution 10A.
Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Council of the City of Bethlehem, Northampton County, Pennsylvania, in accordance with the above-cited Municipal Records Manual, hereby authorizes the destruction of the Police Department public records as stated in Exhibit A attached to the resolution. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Negron and Mr. Waldron.
Discussion? Please call the roll.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10B.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Celebration Fireworks, Inc. for the July 4th Fireworks Celebration event. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Negron and Mr. Waldron.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. I will accept a motion in a second to consider resolutions 10C through 10E as a group.
So moved.
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Callahan, second by Ms. Negron. If the clerk would please call the roll on the motion.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. If the clerk would please read Resolution 10C through 10E.
Certificates of appropriateness under the provisions of the Act of the Pennsylvania Legislature and Bethlehem Ordinance are hereby granted for 220 East 3rd Street to install a sign, 412 East 4th Street to secure a COA to install a new hanging sign, 215 to 217 Broadway to construct a new addition. A partial additional structure will be demolished, including the foundation. The resolutions are sponsored by Ms. Negron and Mr. Waldron.
Discussion? The clerk, please call the roll.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. New business this evening. Dr. Van Wert, you have an announcement?
The Community Development Committee will meet on Tuesday, May 11th at 6 o'clock in Town Hall. There are two agenda items. The first item is discussion of an administration proposed bill to expand the eligibility requirements for board members on the Historic and Architectural Review Board. Second is review of the administration's Southside Planning Study.
Thank you. Is there any other new business for members of council? Ms. Negron?
Thank you, President Waldron. I just want to say thank you to Mayor Donches for securing that food supermarket, the ideal food basket in the South Side. I think that's, and also to have, in the meantime, having the Kelly Foundation doing the fresh food. I know it started last Saturday and people in the South Side were pretty excited about it. I also want to say thank you to the administration, to the mayor, and to the chief of police for taking the time to be at the Fiesta Touchdown Theater Deed. It was a great event. We had a great time, you know, having the police in there. It really made a big difference to the neighbors, to the members there. You know, just picking up coloring books and having the kids coloring, you know, with a book that the police department gave them. You know, some little things that made a difference. And I know that many members of the community have said to me, I wanted to meet the chief. And, you know, just right there, you know, here she is. Go shake hands. Go say hello to her. So, you know, just having not just her, but other members of the department there and some people of color, members of the police department, it made a big difference. So I thank you for being there with us. And again, to the administration for supporting that move. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Mr. Callahan?
I just like to finish up on my comments about affordable housing and my point of view on it. You know, it's supply and different driver education companies move into the Lehigh Valley. I would obviously have to lower my price. Same thing with hospitals. Same thing with, I don't care if you own a funeral home, a nursing home, whatever it is. The more supply we have, the less the demand. And the, you know, the lower the price is going to be. It's going to be, the only way we're going to come out of this housing project is by, if we throw an extra 1,000 units of residential housing in the city of Bethel, the supply is going to lower and bring down the cost of housing. Right now, the costs are high because there's not a lot of housing available. And we have a lot of people that want to move into the city. If we increase the supply and we're more receptive to developers, I'm gonna say something. I hope I don't get in trouble for this, but you know, myself and the mayor and Mr. Reynolds received an email from a developer, not Mr. Ronca. It's another developer in the area, which we really only had maybe four or five big time developers in the area. We don't have unlimited amount of developers. Both myself, the mayor, I think Ms. Carner was on the memo, and Ms. Reynolds got a memo, and specifically from a developer saying, hey, Bethlehem is not very receptive to development right now. And we've been making it harder and harder for people to develop in the city. And Easton, who we are in competition with, make no mistake about it, is down there. Mayor Panel's got his arms wide open. And there's two Bethlehem developers that are down there right now. And Easton is more than welcome to take those tax dollars. And I think the best way for us to get out of this housing crisis in the city of Bethlehem is to make is to produce more units. There are people that are in existing moderate level housing that would like to move up to a higher level, and that frees up the affordable housing that they're in now. The south side of Bethlehem right now, if you go on Zillow, you know, I'm not talking about rents because I don't know what the rents are right there right now, but that's probably the best area of the city for affordable housing. If you look at homes over there right now, you can buy a three-bedroom home over there for $175,000. I mean, it's probably the least expensive area to purchase a home in the city of Bethlehem. So, as I said earlier, we have a developer already. I don't know his name. I forgot his name. I don't know him. Never met him. Who is proposing putting 10% of affordable housing in a building over there, and that vote's going to come to us. And so let's see where everybody is on it. You know, let's see how serious we are about affordable housing. And the only thing that's going to get us out is a greater supply. And us being negative and pushing back on development in the city is causing the crisis and many others. So I thank you for the time. Thank you.
Mr. Glenn?
Thank you, Mr. Waldron. Just for a reference, as we were talking about tax rates and things like that, and the city of Easton came up, our city of Bethlehem Municipal millage rate is 19.14, and the city of Easton's millage rate is 24.95. So our tax rate, while we talk about tax increases and things like that, again, this is just for reference, our city taxes are still about 23% lower than those of our neighbor to the east, just for comparison. Thank you.
Mr. Callahan?
Mr. Clone, that's not true. That's millage rate, correct. But our housing stock, our average housing stock and property values are much higher. So it's the assessment of the property times the millage rate. Are you aware of that?
Yes, Mr. Callahan, I am. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Gramsci-Smith?
I will be really brief because it's so late, but I just wanted to say thank you so much to all the Southside folks who called in about affordable housing. I certainly hear them, and our task force is still working on, developing like a toolbox that we can use. It's really, a matter of getting incentives and sitting down with developers and getting them to be willing to listen, and we're hoping. The plan is definitely, I'm sorry, but I'm sort of punched around trying to talk at this late date in the evening. But anyway, we are going to continue with the Affordable Housing Task Force and certainly look for new members and new entities to join on. So I really look forward to working with folks on the South Side and everyone throughout the city so that we can meet our goal of having Bethlehem be truly inclusive in housing. Thank you.
Mr. Callahan.
One last thing. I would ask all council members to support my ask to administration for $5 million. When this money, a buddy in every department imaginable asking for money, and if we really think affordable housing is a priority, we need to put our money where our mouths are, and I would hope that I have the support of everybody on council to take at least $5 million of the $33 million and put that towards the affordable housing crisis. And I want to thank. It's not my work. I have been impassioned by the work of Councilwoman Grace Cranfield Smith, and it's in her name that I make this ask. Thank you so much.
Thank you all for joining us this evening. This meeting is adjourned.